This is the Quality News Network. Two of the Pentagon's top military commanders told Congress today that Iraq may be headed for civil war. And Britain's outgoing ambassador to Iraq told the BBC that Iraq will probably be divided along ethnic lines eventually. If Iraq does fall into civil war, one U.S. senator says Congress may have to take another look at President Bush's authority to wage war in Iraq. In Baghdad today, at least 10 civilians were killed in a motorcycle bombing at a crowded marketplace. Another dozen were killed in scattered violence elsewhere. And the Pentagon says one U.S. soldier and one Marine died yesterday in Anbar province. 10 U.S. troops have been killed there in less than a week. In Israel, Hezbollah rockets killed 11 Israelis, most of them civilians, in the bloodiest day for Israel since the fighting began. The group's leader vowed today to strike Tel Aviv in retaliation for continued Israeli airstrikes in Beirut. The U.S. hopes to have a resolution in place by tomorrow that would end the fighting. Meanwhile, the State Department announced today that the U.S. will help equip and train the Lebanese army once the fighting eases. In Gaza, Palestinian officials say at least 7 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike. Most of the dead are reportedly militants, although one child was also killed. Israel says the strike was aimed at a militant group that was planning to launch a rocket. Weather forecasters now think Tropical Storm Chris will not be the first hurricane of the Atlantic season. Hurricane researchers also say there will probably not be as many strong hurricanes and storms this year as they had predicted earlier. Much of the nation is still sweltering under record-breaking temperatures. Numerous heat-related deaths and power outages are being reported. But forecasters expect some relief tomorrow as the cool front moves across the northeast and midwest. In South China, hundreds of thousands of people have been evacuated. A typhoon hit the coastline after it blew through the southern Philippines, killing at least 6. In Miami, terrorism suspect Jose Padilla's trial has been postponed until January. A federal judge agreed to a delay after his lawyers argued that they would not be ready by September when the case was originally scheduled to be heard. And in New Orleans, a federal appeals court has ruled that former Congressman Tom DeLay's name should remain on the ballot over Democrats' objections. DeLay resigned in June and is awaiting trial on money laundering and conspiracy charges.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The FDA has approved seasonal flu vaccines made by 4 different manufacturers, including GlaxoSmithKline. 100 million doses are expected to be available for the 2006-2007 season. Drug maker Merck has been found not liable by a California jury in another Vioxx case. The jury found the drug did not cause a heart attack of a 71-year-old man. Merck faces at least 14,000 more lawsuits involving the painkiller. Ford is recalling more than 1 million large pickup trucks, SUVs, and vans. The company says a problem with the vehicle's cruise control system could lead to a fire. AOL says it will cut up to 5,000 employees in the next 6 months. That comes a day after the company announced it would no longer charge for email and other services. Apple Computer is teaming up with GM, Ford, and Mazda to integrate its iPod into car audio systems. The collaboration begins with the 2007 model year. Sprint reports lower than expected second quarter earnings of $370 million, causing its shares to fall 14%. The company says it expects slower growth in the wireless market. And DreamWorks is reporting a second quarter profit, largely thanks to last summer's release of Madagascar. Light sweet crude settled at $75.46 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 43 points, NASDAQ up 13 points, S&P 500 up 2. There's more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I don't know what it's like where you are, but where I am, where we are, baby, it's still hot. And I don't know many prescriptions for this, except for, you know, revel in it. Revel in it. Agnes and I were having a conversation a little bit ago, and she said, it's what?
Nothing.
Agnes and I were having a conversation a little bit ago. She's looking at me like I got two heads.
Actually, you have three, but...
Yeah, we do. We have conversations. We sit here in the sauna. We throw another eucalyptus bough on the little burner, and... No, but she said, you know, man, it's just too hot. And I said, you know, it is. It is. But by the same token, I was raised in this stuff. This is, you know, where I come from, where I spent my boyhood, this is what it feels like June, July, August, and September. I remember being a very, very bad young high school football player and having full pads on in this kind of stuff, 95, 98, 100 degrees. Don't drink too much water, boy, you'll throw up. Well, it's that or die, coach. Run a lap. But sometimes all you can do is sit back, let it beat down on you, and if you know, and indulge in the beverage of your choice. Right now, I have this thing, this fantasy thing going in my head. With a nice deck and a zinc wash tub just filled with long neck Pabst Blue ribbons. This is the point where Clyde over at WD-40 goes, ew! Just busted up ice and covering them all almost to the bottle caps and a little bit of rock salt thrown on the top of the ice to make the ice make the beer even colder. Maybe a sliced, maybe some watermelon sliced up. Man, this heat is Faulknerian. I mean, this is Tennessee Williams heat. And there, as blistering as it is, there's something nice about it. So I was working around in the yard a little bit earlier today, and trying to tidy up a little bit. And I'm not trying to be gross or anything, but the sweat was just pouring off of me. Probably because I sit in this chair. And work on show and network stuff so much that I've got some to give. But it was in its own way refreshing. Sometimes you got to just give in and deal with it. Sometimes you got to let things be what they are. Yeah, looking at the chat room. Then you die, Bob. Got to get tough, boy. But this is sure enough summer. Now, what's on tap for tonight? Here in a little bit, we're going to be talking to a gentleman by the name of Brian Moore. Brian is a candidate for Senate in the state of Florida. Basically, it boils down to a contest between him and Catherine Harris, the Republican, who just happens to be crazier than a cockroach on a three-day decon binge, and Bill Nelson, a Democrat, ostensibly. Anybody want to haul up the records and see where Bill was when it came time to filibuster Samuel Alito? Anybody want to see where Bill was when it came time to vote for the war in Iraq? So while I don't often afford non-Democrats a chance to pitch their campaigns here, in this instance I'm going to, because I believe a strong showing for Mr. Moore would be an ice cold wake up call, much needed for Mr. Nelson. Because, well, again, Catherine Harris, the lady who lays on the Mary Kay with a trowel. You know, not to mention, you know, goes to $4,000 dinners at Washington restaurants. Did I eat that much? So we'll be talking with Brian Moore in a little bit. Probably a matter of a few minutes. Now, beyond that, you know, of course, that your phone calls are always welcome. 877-443-2366. And I'd like to engage in a little bit of what some might call navel-gazing, if you don't mind. Oh, my God, it's lint! Where's the lint come from? A little bit of navel-gazing, because I got, a lot of people listen to this program in delay over at ShelbyLapreysRadioPower.org. And we are sincerely grateful to Shelby for her efforts. And I'm assuming that this person who wrote in did so because she was listening to because the replay runs from 3 to 6 p.m. the previous day's show over at Radio Power. And apparently was listening in and wrote to me. And I can't help it. You know, I do. I navel gaze. Because she wrote, "I just found you on internet radio. I'm a proud progressive and a proud liberal, and I'm sickened by what's happening in our country. I believe the devastation wrought by this present administration has been aided by the lapdog media and right-wing hate radio." Okay, well, we're singing off the same page. We're in the same choir there. But then you know, she kind of dropped a bomb on me. "So how are you different?" she asks. "I've been listening for an hour, and I hear the same ugliness, hate, just the same ugly stuff I hear when I'm spinning the dial in the car, only from a different side. Believe me, I'm no fan of this administration on a personal level. I despise George Bush, Karl Rove, despise them. I don't know that it's possible to feel more revulsion for these people than I do. They are deserving of hell for what they've done to our country." She goes on, "But that's my personal opinion, which I express to like-minded others. My public persona is simply focused on this. Progress and liberal politics will benefit all people. We'll not sacrifice the poor for the benefit of the rich. We'll not allow our government to become a welfare machine for corporate interests. Tell me how this kind of radio," she asks, "the concept of which I love, helps. I guess I just want something better. I want some decency, responsibility in government. I want concern for the well-being of all people. I want Republicans to realize that progressives and liberals are the responsible party, that we will do well for all people of this country. I don't want to be just like them. I'm new. I'm open. I genuinely want to know how your program helps." I think that's the nicest that I've ever been cast, most the nicest I've ever been castigated ever. And I have never put forward, navel-gazing, I have never put forward that this program is for everyone. Because I know it's not. I know that there are people out there who don't have the stomach to stand up to the right wing and punch them in the face before they punch you back again. Because we've been punched. We've been sucker punched, kidney punched, rabbit punched. We've been kicked in the groin, lopped off at the knees, hit in the head, boxed our ears, and hit and lopped in the Adam's apple. And we have taken all of that without throwing the first punch back. The White House should have been John Kerry's for the asking. It would have been had he done one thing, had he counterpunched. Had he punched back when Karl Rove punched him, he would be sitting in the White House now. So there are complaints about the incivility of our political process, but for anyone with a sense of historical perspective, you know that it's never been civil. It was incivil when they were writing letters about Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. It was incivil when Alexander Hamilton was running around with a whispering campaign in New York that Aaron Burr was sleeping with his daughter. Aaron Burr was sleeping with Aaron Burr's daughter. Let's get that impersonal pronoun out of the way and take him. You understand. incivility has ruled the political process in this country from day one. And the winners have always turned, and the winners and the people of vision who have always turned out to be the ones who were willing to fight back. Not necessarily who were willing to throw the first punch, but were willing to damn well throw the second one and put it to an end. But I do, I make fun of right-wingers. I make fun of Republicans because you know what? They deserve derision. I don't want them to be part of any coalition that we build. I don't want them to be part of any future. I want so many progressives, I want so many liberals out there that we can utterly marginalize the religion industry freaks. They say that they're about 20% of the electorate right now. They're only 20% of the electorate because they have grown themselves to that point. We start adding progressives, we start adding liberals, we start adding real grassroots, not this AstroTurf garbage, but grassroots Democrats. And we can reduce that 20% cancerous knot of the religion industry to 10, 5, and nil. And that is where I am going. So I'm going to bring it. I'm going to bring it every night. I'm going to poke fun at them. I'm going to make fun of them. I'm going to point out evil where I see it. Because I can't do anything else. I'm not going to spend 3 hours of my life every evening sitting around here singing Kumbaya. Because when we've sat around and sang Kumbaya, the Republicans, the stump licker bunch, as I've described them from time to time, just come over and stomp our little guts in. These are fighting times. These are heroic times. These are not the times for reasoned conversation and shrinking violence. Now, we're joined on the phone by, as I told you, independent senatorial candidate from Florida, Brian Moore. Brian, are you with us?
Hello, Bob.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing very well, sir. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I hope we can get your name out there and let folks hear a little bit about what you've got to say. Now, I told folks before you came on, I don't often let non-Democrats come on and pitch their campaigns, but I see in your circumstance a reason for me to do so.
Well, thank you. I certainly am upset about the way things are going, and I feel like I'm running against two Republicans anyway. Bill Nelson's legislates like a Republican and talks like a Republican, and I think he wants to be perceived as one in this state anyway.
From the Lieberman wing of the Democratic Party at the very best, right?
At the very best, right.
Where was, I asked rhetorically, but I figure you probably know, Brian, where was Bill Nelson on the Alito discussion? Samuel Alito?
Well, it's my understanding that he was certainly supportive of Mr. Alito, and he voted for him, and he also was highly positive on Alberto Gonzalez for the heading the Justice Department as well.
Voted for John Ashcroft, maybe?
I'm sure he did.
Voted for the Patriot Act?
Patriot Act, right on down the line. The war, every year for additional funds. You name it, right down the line. He 58-60% of his votes have been consistent with George Bush's policies, and the Conservative Institute, a national institute in Washington, rated him one of the top five Democrats closest to their philosophy. So he's not demonstrated much leadership or courage, as far as we're concerned, and it just continually seems to fail as he plays it safe and close to the vest and only speaks out when it's safe to do so. I mean, today he spoke out, or yesterday, just because Castro got sick, you know? And he just said that it's be ready to assert your independence, and he's authoring a bill to provide $80 million to anybody that wants to try to overthrow or upset the government, especially if it's in a transition stage.
Is it just me, Brian, or do I seem to remember something about the Bay of Pigs? I mean, haven't we been down this road before?
I think so. Very frightening, and it just seems like we never learn our lesson. I mean, Vietnam should have been certainly an eye-opener for us, but we continually repeat ourselves, and the Congress has just failed us and failed us to stand up for what their principles that they're supposed to believe in, adhere to, and the Constitution and the rule of law, and they just seem to wimp out on it. So I'm very critical of both political parties and their failure to lead this nation, and I think that's why we're in the situation that we're in now.
Well, now, the conventional wisdom in Florida, Brian, would suggest that you have to bow and kowtow and scrape and crawl across ground glass on your bare hands and knees to the ultra-right-wing radical Cuban community in South Florida. What you just said about not overthrowing the Cuban government, I'm sure, wouldn't sit well with them. How do you square that? I mean, Florida's Florida, right?
Yeah, but the Cubans have provided a lot of money to permanent politicians, and I think that's why, especially the Republicans, have adhered to their whims and wishes. And they're, in my opinion, just a group of many of them right wing conservatives. They're very hard hearted. I mean, the fact that they went out on the streets and would actually be cheering at the prospect of someone's death is just so disgusting. And as far as I'm concerned, we don't need them. I mean, if they want to go back to Cuba, they should go back to Cuba.
Yeah, but you
they
and I, Brian,
in my
you
opinion, represent what's what we stand for here in America. Anybody that dared speak out against their criticism of Castro, they blackballed. They wouldn't let entertainers perform. I mean, they've been anti-democratic all the way down the line.
Yeah, and that's what I'm. You don't really think that they're just going to pack up? Okay, Fidel's dead. We're going home. You know, no, the gig's too good here, Brian.
You better believe it. Oh, they got it made here. The only thing they're thinking about is making money in Cuba. They can go down there and set up a business and then operate it from Miami. You know, it's just. I mean, in the beginning, wasn't it basically the. The merchants and the people that were ripping off the country that had to leave when Castro took over before he declared himself a communist.
Sure, Dole, United Fruit, the tobacco interests.
Not only that, but the businessmen, the people, the merchants, the people that had a lot to lose because he came to power. They fled to Miami, and it was self-interest. It was greed. That was what's motivated them then, and I suspect that they're motivated by that right now.
Well, I don't doubt it. There's a lot of that going around.
And the embargo that our government has imposed on this country. I mean, they're the only country in the world, the only country in our world, our America's world, where we have a surplus. We don't have a deficit situation with Cuba, but we have it with China. And Japan and
well, sure, and we can
you
and
name it.
You know, Vietnam's a communist regime. Vietnam hates human rights. Vietnam. But you know, they make our shoes. We can have a deal with Vietnam, but you know, 90 miles from Key West. Now, oh no, you know, Fidel, bad man.
That's right.
I mean, it's crazy. I don't know if you followed it, Brian, but I remember a year or two ago following something, and Bill Nelson and Mel Martinez both, if I recall correctly, were out there leading the charge to build blimps for radio, for TV Marti.
Yeah.
Blimps. Airplanes.
Well, I mean, this is where I don't understand. They wrap themselves in the American flag. They think they're being patriotic. When they're really contributing to the demise of and hurting a lot of people. I mean, the medical care and social services and the infrastructure that's deteriorating because of their inability to have their economy operate soundly is just an immoral act on the part of our country, all under the guise of fighting communism. Yet we embrace these dictators. Anytime that there was a threat of communism, we compromise our principles at the drop of a hat.
Well, we tried to sell the port of Miami to the United Arab Emirates, and anybody who studies that form of government, Brian, will understand that within the classical meaning of the word, that is a dictatorship. That is literally a tyranny over there.
Yeah.
It run by a couple of princes, and they wanted to sell your port in Miami to those guys. And we're worried about Fidel.
Well, you worry about Fidel when you have a vested interest in corporations, in corporate America, all right? And not only the United Fruit, but, you know, the oil companies, the banks, even the defense industry. I mean, everybody, right? Insurance companies, agriculture, you name it, right on down the line. When you're getting big money to your campaign in the form of $13, $14, $15 million, as Bill Nelson is, and Catherine Harris has, I think, over $11 million, some of it of her own doing, but others through corporate America, then you have to realize where their allegiance is and to whom it is, and that's why they pretend that they're for America when it's really self-interest, preservation, getting reelected, and really forgetting not only what's good for America, but what's good for other people. You know, a lot of people are suffering because of our policies, whether it be Iraq or Cuba, Mexico. I mean, GATT and NAFTA, how we've undermined their economy and forced 1 million Mexican farmers to come north. You know, we are responsible for causing this immigration. Not the farmer, not the Mexicans. They don't want to leave their family. They don't want to leave their culture, but they have to make a living, and so we have to assume responsibility for that and not point fingers and say that they're the ones that are responsible for this.
Well, you know, blaming poor people for a rich man's ills has always been a convenient excuse in this country. Let me ask you something, Brian. You've used the word moral a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible, or is it even proper for? And I'm not talking about, you know, the AstroTurf fake morality of a Bill Frist or a John Cornyn, the right wing Republicans who want to protect unborn babies but don't give a damn about the ones who have already been born. Is it possible to take moral issues into the Senate of the United States?
Well, sure. I think it is. I think you have to not only talk about the principles that our country has stood for in many years, but also the rule of law. But you also have to talk about ethics. You have to talk about what's right. And I mean, remember the World Council of Churches and the American bishops and the Pope, they all came out prior to our invasion of Iraq and declared that if we tried or attempted to take a preemptive strike on Iraq, it would be immoral and as well as illegal. There were no grounds for any imminent threat to our safety. There was no clear facts or information to indicate that there were weapons of mass destruction. So these moral leaders took an ethical stand, and they spoke out clearly. I wish they had continued to speak out after the die was cast, but at least they demonstrated that leadership, and I applaud them for that. But that's, to me, is where you have part of being of a leader is moral leadership, and that's where I fault Nelson. I mean, Nelson has not demonstrated any moral leadership. You know, he just—it's expedient leadership. You know, it's getting reelected leadership. It's getting big dollar leadership. It's self-interest leadership. And I think we have to think of the common man and the general welfare, and forget about our loyalties to our party, or sometimes even to our country, when ethical conduct is demanded. I mean, treating prisoners. You know, this rendition of prisoners to foreign countries. I mean, outrageous, immoral, unethical, violation of the Geneva Accords, contrary to the principles of what America has stood for in the past. You know, where are we going? Who are we? What have we become? And so you need people to speak up and the common man to speak up. And myself as a citizen and as a civic activist, I think that this is our role. This is where we have to say something. We have to run for office, and we have to challenge them and make them make a decision and make them have to confront and say yay or nay.
Well, let me run a couple of things, because I see things through a moral prism as well, Brian. Let me run a couple of moral issues by you, if I may.
Okay.
A guy or a woman who works 40 50 hours a week, tries to feed a family, pays $3.10, $3.20 a gallon for gasoline. We're talking right now about maybe giving that minimum wage worker a raise from $5.15 an hour to, oh, let's be generous, $7.25 an hour over the course of 2 or 3 years. My moral question in this instance, Brian, is why are we talking about that? Why aren't we talking about a real living wage for human beings? Not a minimum wage, because a minimum wage means minimum life.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here. One of my positions on my platform is that I advocate a living wage. And I think it's just not ethical. It's not even good business sense, in my opinion, because you encourage immigration when you pay such poor wages. So I think one way to discourage immigrants and to encourage Americans to participate in the economy is to pay them a living wage, give them $12, $14, $16 an hour. Yeah, so that each family, this should be a right for all Americans, just as health care should be a right.
There's the next one.
I think that in the long run, this will help business and help our economy, and it will stabilize these social problems that we have. We won't see the immigration problem that we are seeing now, because nobody here wants to work for those menial wages. So you're right. I mean, it's a big deal. Minimum wage.
Yeah, 3 years from now.
Yeah, and it's the same. Well, I mean, you know, this is true of the middle class too. I mean, we're seeing a deterioration of the middle class and the middle manager. I mean, all these outsourcing of jobs. It's going to affect the entire country. I mean, our country is going to go downhill, whether we like it or not, because of these policies, these blind, stupid, foolish. I don't know what else the world. What happens if we have a world war? You know, where are we going to manufacture the products?
We lose, Brian. We lose.
In World War II.
You know, the generals came out yesterday and said 60% of the National Guard brigades are unready. For any sort of duty. Our army is broken. We're so desperate. I read the article today, Brian. We just upped the enlistment age to 42 in the United States Army. They're trying to catch up with me. I'm at 43 and a half, and it'll be 44. You know, I'm going to wind up in green, Brian. I'm being facetious, but these are real issues. There's a piece of legislation banging around in the Congress that, of course, the Republicans won't even stop to look at, called the Employees Free Choice Act. Are you familiar with that thing?
Not really, no.
Okay, that says, that's basically a card check bill. That says at any point on any job, you know, in any business, when you get to 50% of people, the minute that you get to 50% who say that they want a union, they got a union.
Yeah.
And you've got, and the company has to start bargaining with them in good faith. That's about 90. That's 180 degrees from where it is now. Is that something you'd get behind?
Well, terrific. Sure, the rights of the worker. I mean, we've lost those, all those rights that in the 20s and 30s and the 40s, the unions and protections and the safety and the pensions and the Social Security and the workers' comp, all of those things that were fought for so hard are now being thrown out the door because they're outsourcing these companies to foreign countries. So everything that was gained is no longer viable. So even if you have a union and you have a good union with solid benefits, and then you go and outsource that company to Saigon or somewhere, well then it's not applicable. So we do need unions, and that should be the right of passage here in our country, because it's in our self-interest. But we also have to stop the big move, and that's the outsourcing, the free trade, the GATT, the NAFTA, and the World Trade Organization.
So would you actively advocate in the United States Senate, Brian, for a repeal of NAFTA?
That is my position on my website right now. You know, votebrianmoore.com is my website, and on it you'll find that I am advocating the repeal of the of NAFTA and GATT, all right, and that it pulling out of our participation with the World Trade Organization. I mean, these are just suicidal actions on the part of our country, as legislated by a foolish Congress who is more loyal to corporate America. You know, we have a corporate government. It's not, you know, corporate government, just like we have our own government, the corporations are a government in themselves. And they are given higher priority than the citizens' rights. And that's what rules America, and that's what the politicians adhere to. So you know, with corporations having the power, you can see where unions have trouble. But you know, sometimes we need to keep the unions in line too. I mean, they've sold out a lot, just like the political parties have sold out. So it's the officers and the leaders who have not shown fortitude and courage and strength of will and adherence to principles and morality and the rule of law and the way things should be done, you have nothing. So leadership is so important and so key. And even now what I'm doing, so many people are fearful. They're afraid to talk. I mean, we're almost like Russia. You know, America is almost like Russia. You don't dare, say things contrary to political correctness. You know, people are afraid to talk up at work. They're afraid to tell or say what things to their neighbor. It's no longer the America that I grew up in when I was a kid. And so we've got to take it back and make it ours. And that's, you know, that's what it's all about.
Brian, I've got a pretty good idea of what moved you to the idea of running for Senate, but where did you move to this Senate run from? What's your background, your training, your experience, your education?
Well, first of all, I ran for Congress in 2002 as an independent because I was concerned at that time that we might go to war that was illegal and immoral. And so I spoke out against the war resolution as a candidate for Congress, and I advocated a national health care for all Americans. And at that time, the Patriot Act was passed, and so I was critical of that. The Democratic incumbent of 10 years voted for those issues, except she didn't vote for a national health care plan. She was taking money from pharmaceutical companies. And the same thing in 2004, I ran as a Democrat thinking that I was more Democratic than the incumbent, who, by the way, lost in 2002. But I was mistaken. My anti-war position was not embraced. I was criticized as being a spoiler. And it was the logical step up to see that we were going to have a Senate race, and it was being led by an incumbent Democrat who had supported the war, endorsed the war, embraced the war, was fearful of, he'd take a neutral stand, he wouldn't speak out on hardly anything. So there was nobody else. We looked, I called around, I even asked to see if Bob Graham might be willing to run again, even though he had just stepped down 2 years before, because he had been so forthright against the war as a presidential candidate in the primaries. But that wasn't necessary. So nobody came forward. And so I thought it was going to be nobody was going to talk about it. They weren't going to address it. Everybody was going to wipe their hands. So somebody had to carry the banner. But I also heard and saw this disillusionment on the part of Americans with Congress and the fact that many, many people now are responding in public when we demonstrate, when we call for Bush's impeachment. I mean, people were getting thumbs up, we're getting honks and horns, I feel that I really represent the majority of Americans more so than Bill Nelson, the incumbent Democratic senator, or Catherine Harris, the conservative Republican, and that nobody represents the majority of Americans that are part of the two-party system.
Do you come from a working background, Brian?
Yes, I do. My father was a railroad man for the Southern Pacific Railroad, and he was lucky to graduate from high school in California. My grandfather ran a section gang for the Southern Pacific Railroad in California as well. And my other grandfather was a ferry boat captain down on the engine room, and then Standard Oil tankers along the coast. So my mother was a secretary over in San Francisco, and my father worked for the railroad. I grew up working in steel fabrication plants and in construction in the different odd jobs that I could get. And then I went into I went to a year of college as a freshman, and then I entered the Catholic seminary. I became a Franciscan, which was an order dedicated to serving the poor. And I was there 5 years and left 2 years before ordination. Then came out, got a master's degree in public administration from Arizona State. Went in the Peace Corps for 3 years, served in Latin America, the poor again, and I was awakened to the third and fourth world and the poverty and the illness and the lack of health and the fact that I knew that when I returned to America with a graduate degree that I would probably be able to pick up a job easily. So, you know, all of those things motivated me to be political. And I, you know, was initially a Democrat, and I worked for George McGovern and Eugene McCarthy and Robert Kennedy and Morris Udall and, you know, you name it. And I was in California and Arizona and Wisconsin doing volunteer work for them. I worked for a congressman in California, Wayne Owens in Utah, Andy McGuire in New Jersey. But I began to change because the Democrats didn't seem to adhere to the principles. And so then I entered the Citizens Party, Barry Commoner, and then I helped John Anderson when he ran as an independent. Jerry Brown ran as an independent a couple times. And then, of course, Reform Party with Ross Perot. And the first time he ran in 92, he was just an independent. So, you know, and then when I began to, I lived in Washington, D.C. for about 20 years, and you talk about corruption and fraud and nepotism, and it was done by the Democratic Party at that time. Marion Barry was the titular head, and it was as corrupt an administration as I'd ever seen, and everybody was fearful to speak out against Marion Barry. So I ran for city council and called the council a rubber stamp and fearful of challenging him and the incumbency. And then I ran for mayor against Barry also several times. And so I've taken on the establishment. I've been as an independent, I've been outspoken and believing that you have to adhere to principles, you have to speak up for what's right, and that come what may, you can't be fearful of the consequences. Even though along the line I've never been able to be successful initially, but I've always landed on my feet, and ultimately, and in hindsight, the positions I took were the correct ones. And I've been proven to be right more than wrong most of the time, and so I have faith and confidence in myself and in my fellow man and my belief that the country is going downhill, and if we don't have people to assert themselves and to challenge authority, challenge the establishment, challenge Ralph Nader calls the duopoly, the two-party system that's been corrupted by corporate America, big money, special interests, we're going to get nowhere. We have to take it back. And if we don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. And we've got to do it now, and that's why I'm doing it right now in 2006 when it's a long shot. You know, the odds are against us. You know, Bill Nelson has his 13 million and Catherine Harris has her 10 million. But you know and I know that America is just fed up with this crap. And so we're doing the right thing. But whether the establishment and the parties and the media and the press want to go along with us, I don't know. But we got to do what we have to do.
Well, I can certainly understand all of that, Brian. You mentioned the millions that Bill Nelson has and the millions that Catherine Cruella DeVille Harris has. I really don't like her, Brian. I got issues going back to 2000. I got issues.
Yeah.
But I would think then that it would be a no-brainer to ask you where you come down on issues like the public financing of political campaigns.
Well, that's to me is a no-brainer. We have to have that in order for our countries to survive. We cannot compete against the big dollar. Okay, we cannot beat the big dollar. They spread the propaganda. They buy out the mindset of the American people. You know, politicians can say, well, you've got to vote and you can change things. Well, you can't. You cannot change things when and that's why half America doesn't vote, because they cannot change things because the big money rules. And we have to motivate the people that don't vote the system's going to get so bad that we will have a social upheaval, and it will either be done in the ballot box, or if it doesn't done in the ballot box, well, then
it happens in the streets.
The streets.
Yeah, I would think you're sitting there in the heart, the home of bad voting practices. How would you feel about a commitment, Brian, to the minute you get to the Senate, one of the first things you do would be a repeal of the Help America Vote Act and all of its ugly little black box voting the tenets.
I agree. I mean, we need paper trails, okay?
How about paper ballots, Brian?
We don't have here in Florida.
How about paper ballots?
Paper ballots, right.
Yeah, you know, paper ballot, pencil, count the ballot, election, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you've mentioned corporations a couple of times. Why do we have to, you know, we've got this civic structure, county clerks, county recorders, depending on the structure of the particular individual political subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
And for years and years and years, and it still works in many other places in the world, I might add, you use that civic structure that's already in place. And the people who work in the county clerk's office count the little paper ballots, and they go home, you know, once every 2 years. They have to work till 3 a.m. What's wrong with that? Why do we have to have ESNS? Why do we have to have Diebold? Why do they have to be involved in the single most important civic process in this country? Why does corporate money, why does private interest have to have its finger in our electoral pie?
They don't. They don't. I mean, we've gone too far in a sophisticated way, and we've lost our ability to control and monitor and police what we're doing. So, because of what we consider progress. So I agree. We have to go back. We have to take a step back, in a sense, in order to retain control and retain integrity of the system. We lose integrity of the system when you can't control it, and you can't, there's no accountability there. And so, and that's what Congress is not doing, you know, accountability, you know, holding people accountable, holding the military accountable, you know, holding the executive branch accountable. You know, whatever happened to accountability? Instead of washing their hands, giving the authority to the executive to make these decisions on his own, and that's where the people have to demand that their political leaders demand accountability. So I agree with you. I support your support of that theme. That issue.
Okay, you've mentioned the war on a couple of occasions, and you have told us that you have a background in social justice. I think the Franciscans may be fairly said to be involved with social justice.
Or the Peace Corps, too.
Yeah, Peace Corps, too, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Given that, let me give you a principle that I have elaborated on a number of times on this program with regard to the war. And I come from a slightly different background than you do, Brian. I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. But some of the principles that I was taught by the little old blue-haired ladies down in the basement kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things, and, you know, it's the kind of stuff you teach a four-year-old, but it tends to work out okay as an adult, too. When you're doing something bad, and you know you ought not be doing it, and you find out, even if it turns out that you didn't know it was bad at the start, but later on you find out you're doing bad or evil, we can use the word evil, when you're doing evil, if you would like to not be an evil person, it is important that you immediately cease doing whatever it is that's evil. On a general principle, can you kind of get on board with that?
Elaborate a little more, though.
Okay, the war.
Mm-hmm.
The war is evil, Brian.
Yeah.
And if we would stop doing an evil thing, which is the war, mm-hmm. we must immediately bring the war to an end.
Right.
And anything else is vacillation. Oh, well, we will have a timetable to bring them home in March of 2019, contingent upon when the Iraqis stand up or step back or you know, dance on one leg, then we will stand down or back up or do the herky-jerky and turn ourselves about. That's a bunch of crap, Brian. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean or anything. That's all vacillating garbage. We got to get out of there now.
I agree. Bring them home now, definitely. I want to have a transition immediately, turn the power and the authority for both to the military and reconstruction over the United Nations. You know, put in 160,000, 200,000 troops immediately so that the lightning rod, which is us, gets the hell out of there. The sooner we get out of there, the less violence we'll see and the less of terrorism and the threat to our safety and well-being, because we're creating this and making it worse. But it's, you know, evil, you can we talk about morality and ethics and evil and all that, but the bottom line is that people get practical, and when you start throwing money figures and human lives figures, the practicality of everyday life, and it's not good business, you know, they sit up and take note. And I'm sorry to say that, but it's reached that point now where you don't even have to convince them. They all realize that it's the bad thing to stay over there, and none of them are sticking close to Bush. But it's just we need more people to be forthright like you are, Bob, and say it like it is, and be courageous and stand up. Stand up and, you know, say it's right.
Well, I've been looking at your website, and I can imagine, I mean, I recognize the political realities of what and where Florida is.
Yeah.
You have already stepped on one significant demographic in terms of the Cubans. Then I'm not being mean. It just is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I personally think your position is correct. I imagine that your position of calling for an immediate ceasefire in Lebanon is not going to suit another demographic in Florida.
The Jewish vote.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm waiting for a courageous person in the Jewish community and in the Cuban community to speak up and to say what's on their mind and to adhere to what they know is right and correct. And they will only be emboldened if people like us, you know, criticize what we think is wrong. You know, they're flagrantly, you know, violation of what they're doing, so we need leadership in the Jewish community, and I want them to know that there are other people out here that are critical of them. You know, there's a big peace movement in Israel.
Sure.
You know, do people know that? I mean,
I follow world events, so yes, I do. Mm-hmm. But in America, however, anti-Semitism has been defined, and bear in mind, I got no stomach for any kind of racism, Brian, none whatsoever. Whether it's brown people from Mexico or brown people between the rivers in Mesopotamia, mm-hmm. or any other color of people, type of people, ethnic, nothing. I won't stomach it. But we've gotten to a point where Israel is concerned in this country that there are many organizations and many people who think that if Alan Dershowitz has ever been served a cold cup of coffee, it was by an anti-Semite.
You know, I mean, this whole fear of you know, the racism issue and the political correctness, we have to talk in terms of citizens and Americans, okay? When you talk against the establishment, you're going to offend interest groups. But that's the trouble with America, is that interest groups rule America, just like corporate America rules America. You know, the interest groups and the corporations have the big money, and they have the political clout, and the politicians are in bed with them. We have to be loyal to America, to citizens, you know, forget about the color and the race and the religion and everything. It's America and principles and what's right and wrong. And that's what we talk about. And according to the right and wrong, what Israel is doing in Lebanon is to me, an evil act.
As is
violation of the law of common civilization.
But you know, let's make no mistakes. Lobbing rockets into shopping centers in Haifa is equally evil.
Well, yes, it is, right. But you don't invade a country because a interest group kidnaps two soldiers.
You don't swat flies with sledgehammers.
Right. And you don't invade Iraq because 2,700 people are killed in the trade towers
by 19 guys who weren't from Iraq.
Right. You go after these criminals just like we went after the criminals on this flight over the Lockerbie in Scotland. Okay. But
sure.
No, there's other agendas. Okay. That's where we have to hold the line. You know, we got to apply the common sense and fairness and equity. We have to have a balanced approach to the Middle East. We got to be fair to Israel, but we have to be fair to the Palestinians and the Lebanese and to Hezbollah. I mean, who says Hezbollah is a terrorist group? Well, America and Israel says it's a terrorist group, but the Arabs don't believe it's a terrorist group. You know, they
provide hospitals, clinics, the social arm is right. I understand. Now, let me we're running out of time, Brian, but let me take you to the last question, because I had a fit in 2000 over Ralph Nader's candidacy, and I maintained that had it not been for Ralph,
mm-hmm.
We might not have had the whole controversy in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
That being the case, what do you say? I mean, see, I like what you're saying here.
Yeah.
But what do you say to the person who says, look, you know, Brian, I like what you're saying, but if I vote for you, man, that crazy woman might get in.
Well,
not so much a vote for Brian, but a vote against against Bill Nelson.
Look, first of all, I'm running against two Republicans. It's Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Okay, it doesn't matter who wins. If Bill Nelson wins, we're still going to go to war. If Bill Nelson wins, we're still going to have the Patriot Act. If Bill Nelson wins, we're going to still pay $800 billion to the pharmaceutical industry and the HMOs, where he gets a lot of his money. Because he's doing what Catherine Harris is doing. The only thing maybe he'll differ, he'll differ a vote on stem cell research or something. All right, some social issue. But that's not the main issue. I mean, he embraces Alberto Gonzalez, okay? He embraces Alito. I mean, this guy, you know, the Democrats voted in Thomas and Scalia. I mean, I am really down on the two-party system. I'm down on the Democrats as much as the Republicans. They have failed in leadership, and so we need to elect people. And so it doesn't matter if you elect a Nelson, a weak-kneed, frightened, fearful man, or if you elect Catherine Harris. And I'm saying to you that it's time for Democrats and progressives and liberals and independents to stop holding their nose and to have some confidence and belief in themselves and to be able to look themselves in the mirror and vote for what they believe in and for what's right. I mean, America was changed not because of the two parties. Suffrage, labor unions, you name it, it's all come about, child labor laws, all of these came about from third parties. Okay, that's where it all started. I mean, Abraham Lincoln was in a third party.
True enough.
Okay, social change, you have to vote. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt got, what did he got? He got to
19% of the vote with the Bull Moose Party.
So, I mean, I have a right, people have a right to vote for who they want. I mean, the Democrats and the Republicans don't own the citizens.
No fight out of me on that one.
Where in the Constitution does it say you have to vote Republican or Democrat, or you have to play it safe so that you can get the lesser of two evils? And what do you get? Where have we got? What do we have with
the lesser of two evils is
Dukakis and Gore and Kerry, and what do they bring? What did Clinton bring? Clinton brought us welfare reform, NAFTA, and GATT. I mean, you know, a larger military weapon experts and bloated military budgets. I mean, this country is going downhill, and it's the fault of both parties, and it doesn't matter which of those two-party representatives gets elected.
You know, Brian, it almost sounds to me like you're about to form the Conscience Party.
The Conscience Party?
Yeah.
Well, I'm practical, though. I mean, I believe that, you know, you win by fighting, you know. I mean, I'm a fighter, and I play sports, and, you know, I want to win, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not doing this for my... for my jolly.
No, but you're bringing a boatload of conscience to this debate, and you're going to make me do some thinking.
Yeah.
Okay, and I appreciate it. We do have to go because we're at the top of the hour. It has been a wonderful conversation. I hope you have enjoyed it as much as I have, and I hope folks, especially our listeners in Florida, have gotten out, a lot out of it and realize now that there are three choices on the ballot.
Yes, sir. And could I say my my website again?
I certainly hope you will.
VoteBrianMoore.com.
VoteBrianMoore.com, correct?
That's correct.
Everything standard spelling.
That's correct.
Brian, again, it has been a pleasure, and
thank
I hope
you,
you'll keep in touch and let us know how things are going.
Very grateful to you and your listeners. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Take care.
Bye.
Straight to the news, not even just straight to the news. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A top military commander told Congress today that the violence in Iraq is as bad as he's ever seen it, and unless it's contained, the country could descend into civil war. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld wouldn't say whether the U.S. would maintain its operation in Iraq in the event of a civil war, but he reiterated that the role of the U.S. military is to support Iraq's government. In Baghdad today, at least 10 civilians were killed in a motorcycle bombing. Another dozen people were killed in scattered violence elsewhere. Yesterday, a U.S. soldier and one Marine died in Anbar province. That brings the total number of troops killed there in less than a week to 10. In Afghanistan, at least 21 civilians were killed today in a suicide bombing, and at least three NATO soldiers from Canada were killed in fighting in Kandahar province. In Israel, Hezbollah fired rockets into the northern part of the country, killing 11 Israelis. It was the bloodiest day for Israel since the fighting began. Lebanon's prime minister says 900 Lebanese have so far died. Israel reports 67 Israeli deaths. Hezbollah's leader vowed today to strike Tel Aviv in retaliation for continued Israeli airstrikes in Beirut. Later, an Israeli military official said on public television that if Hezbollah does that, Israel would strike back and destroy all of Lebanon's infrastructure. The oil spill along the Lebanese coastline has now spread to Syria and moving north. The UN is urging a coordinated response to what's being called the worst environmental disaster in Lebanon's history. The spill was caused when an Israeli missile hit a chemical factory nearly 3 weeks ago. In Cuba, the Communist Party says it will retain control of the country no matter what happens to President Fidel Castro. He's temporarily handed over power to his younger brother Raul while he recuperates from surgery. He also delegated power for various projects among six government officials. In Texas, President Bush stopped at the U.S.-Mexico border today to get a firsthand look at border control efforts. He then left to spend 10 days at his ranch in Crawford, the shortest summer vacation since he took office. Weather forecasters now think Tropical Storm Chris will not be the first hurricane of the Atlantic season. Hurricane researchers also say there probably will not be as many strong hurricanes and storms this year as they previously thought. Much of the nation is still sweltering under record-breaking temperatures. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
AOL says it will cut up to 5,000 employees by the end of the year in a restructuring move that comes a day after the company announced it would no longer charge for email and other services. Microsoft is daring the world's best computer experts to try to hack into its soon-to-be-released Vista Windows operating system. The company, which has been plagued with security breaches over the last few years, made a test version available to security experts today. The Commerce Department reports that new factory orders rose last month by 1.2%, the largest amount since March. The number of people who filed for unemployment rose by 14,000 last week to 315,000. Both the Bank of England and the European Central Bank raised interest rates today by 0.25%. The FDA has approved seasonal flu vaccines made by four different manufacturers. 100 million doses are expected to be available this season. IBM says it plans to buy MRO Software, a Massachusetts-based maker of asset and service management software. Among retail giants, Walmart, Nordstrom's, and Penney's all report higher sales for the month of July. And Ford says its second quarter loss of $254 million is due to higher pension costs. Ford also announced its luxury car division is not expected to be profitable this year. Light sweet crude settled at $75.46 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 43 points, NASDAQ up 13. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
And it's 6 minutes past the hour. God, I love a good conversation, and I thought that was a dandy. I hope you did as well. Brian Moore, the independent candidate for Senate in the state of Florida. And I would be lying to you if I said that conversations like that don't conflict me. I am a Democrat. My parents were Democrats. My grandparents were Democrats. Their parents were Democrats, okay? Same thing runs down Agnes's side of the family. But I understand when people are in places where the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have abandoned them. And frankly, Bill Nelson is DLC material. Bill Nelson is Republican light. And Brian Moore makes it to the Senate. I don't think we got, as an independent, I don't think we've got to worry about how he's going to vote. He's going to vote the right way on workers' issues. He's already said so. He's going to vote the right way on health care. He's going to vote the right way on fixing this god-awful Medicare prescription drug benefit. He's going to vote the right way on the war. I wish I had a little bit louder voice in Florida because I would like to scare the dickens out of Bill Nelson. I don't mean anything bad by that. I mean politically terrify him and maybe wake up a little bit of what once upon a time in his somewhere in a lost little corner of his soul huddled up in the dark, just sort of squealing, help me, is that Democrat that's in him. Bill Nelson versus Brian Moore. You tell me who sounded like an FDR Democrat. Now, granted, you didn't hear Bill Nelson. But I know what an interview with Bill Nelson would sound like. Well, Bob, you understand, we got to deal with the political realities of the time. And well, we can't go just saying put all the troops on the plane because we don't have enough planes. Not my fault. Didn't start it. Didn't vote for it. The war ends now. Oh, Bob, that's unrealistic. Horse hockey. Unrealistic is believing that continuing to do the same thing will eventually yield a different result. That's the clinical definition of insanity. So I don't have any problem giving a voice to a man like Brian Moore. He's got the street cred, Peace Corps. Had more than a cup of coffee with the Franciscans who. Peace, social justice. You know where I am on religion, so we'll let that part slide. And any man in Florida who is willing to stand up to the Cubans, bravo, because, you know, they'll kill you. They'll kill you for speaking out against him. Never mind Fidel. They'll kill you for speaking up against the right-wing Cuban community. And this is not an ethnic thing. This is a hateful thing. You know, it's the old bumper sticker with the upside-down frowny face in black. It's mean people suck. And we're talking about some pretty mean people. I mean, do you wonder what? Do you wonder? I went to speaking school. Do you wonder why the news is all a titter with Fidel Castro's bowel resection?
Well, he's still in the hospital, Bill, but we're not sure whether that means he's going to recover.
Could I point out that, well, nah, never mind. I mean, it's like the guy on the back of the wagon in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I'm not dead yet!
Ah, you're very ill. You will be very soon.
Do you understand there is an entire corporate culture in the United States that is panting, pawing itself, waiting to get after Cuba? I read an article in Esquire a few years back by a guy who illegally went to Cuba. And what he wrote was that it was like going back in a time machine. He said it's still 1959 in Cuba. All the cars are no later model than 1959. Some of them have been re-engineered by enterprising people to run on kerosene. And I'm not saying, you know, no, I'm not saying it's the worker's paradise, but could I point out to you that a mother giving birth in Cuba has a greater chance of remaining alive after the birth than a mother giving birth in America? Can I point out to you that the baby born to that mother has a greater chance of surviving its first year of life than the baby born in America? That's not to say that Fidel is a good person or a bad person. I imagine he is a mixed bag, much like many others. When you get right down to it, George Bush has killed a hell of a lot more people than Fidel Castro. Sorry, it's fact. It's math, baby. I mean, 2 + 2 and a miracle occurs, and it's 4. No. Math is math. International language. George Bush has killed more human beings than Fidel Castro. Sorry. Let's go to the phones. David is joining us from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. I have a bunch of different news stories that I'm going to run down, and it's not Israel, it's not Lebanon, and it's not Iraq, and it's not any of that.
Okay, cool.
But it's important stuff. Okay, the first one is about the Amazon. The vast Amazon rainforest is on the brink of being turned into desert with catastrophic consequences for the world's climate.
Yep.
And the process, which would be irreversible, could begin, this is a shocker now, as early as next year. Studies by the Blue Chip Woods Hole Research Center came out in Amazonia have concluded that the forest cannot withstand more than 2 consecutive years of drought without breaking down. Scientists say this would spread drought into the northern hemisphere, including Britain, and could massively accelerate global warming with incalculable consequences spinning out of control, a process that might end in the world becoming uninhabitable. The alarming news comes in the midst of a heat wave gripping Britain and much of Europe and the United States. By the end of the year, the trees had released more than 2/3 of the carbon dioxide they have stored during their lives, helping to act as a brake on global warming. Instead, they accelerating the climate change.
Wow.
So there you go. Early
well, yeah, the Earth's lungs.
What is that?
It's the Earth's lungs.
Yeah. It's the Earth's revenge.
But I mean, the Earth breathes, the planet breathes in the Amazon basin.
Right. I think the Earth fights back. You know, when you kick something down something long enough, it's going to rise up.
Yeah.
And that's with anything. And you know, just to bring an interesting thing to what you guys were talking about earlier. I believe 21st century socialism is going to rise up, because right now what this capitalist system is doing right now, and I hate to be the ones to tell them if right wingers are listening, what you're doing is you're just practically digging up the graves right now. You're just taking dirt mound by dirt mound of everything that you fear. And you know, it's like when you see those B movies with a vampire. If you want that socialist vampire to come out and bite you,
keep doing. Yeah, keep doing what you're doing.
Keep doing what you're doing, because it's going to.
And you said you weren't going to bring up Israel, but it's the same thing. Every bomb that falls in Lebanon, every little baby that gets blown to bits, makes 15, 20 more people look up at that Uncle Nasrullah wants you poster and say, "Hey, maybe he's not so bad."
And the problem that people don't understand is that the more you take, the more that this is all held accounted on some cosmic sheet. I believe that. And
yeah.
I'm sorry if people don't believe that, and that's why you never hear me saying this person's bad. That person's bad, because I don't know if a person is bad or good on a scale. All I can do is judge them by their actions, and I say, that seems to me not to be really a good thing. But this is what the opposition does. They want to demonize something so bad and make it reality that it just becomes a madhouse.
Yeah. Greg Palast titled his book very nicely, didn't he? Armed Madhouse.
Armed Madhouse, that's right. The other thing, China is making an artificial sun.
Huh?
The first plasma discharge from China's Experimental Advanced Superconducting Research Center, the so-called artificial sun, is set to occur next month. The discharge, expected about August 15th, will be conducted at Science Island in Hefei in East China's Anhui Province. Science told the newspaper successful tests will mean the world's first nuclear fusion device of its kind will be ready to go into actual operation.
Fusion or fission?
Fusion.
Wow, okay, so we're still at fusion.
Still at fusion. It says
No, that's fusion, not fission. Okay, we're doing fission. The fusion, yeah, okay, from fusion goes from hydrogen up. Fission goes from U-238 or whatever down.
You said it, not me.
Okay.
basically, I say it doesn't sound harmful to me.
No.
It just sounds like they're experimenting But this one, Bob, makes you go, oh, my God. Pepsi and Coke under fire again. Activist of the India Democratic Party in Delhi. A CSA report in 2003 resulted in Pepsi and Coca-Cola strenuously rejecting claims that their drinks were unsafe. Soft drink manufacturers have condemned the latest findings. Soft drinks are completely safe, the Indian Soft Drink Manufacturers Association said a statement. And then CSE director Sunita Narain told journalists in Delhi that samples from 12 states showed that Pepsi products contained 30 times more pesticides than found in 2003.
Yum, yum.
Yeah, she said. Likewise, she said the Coke samples had 25 times. Oh, so it's only five times difference. I mean, I guess
don't drink the water, don't drink the Pepsi, don't drink the Coke. There's a reason God gave human beings beer, David.
I believe it, though. I believe that people put their pesticides in soft drinks.
Well, no, I don't necessarily know that they're actively putting it in there, but what you've got is in a burgeoning economy like that of China or India, you've got the environmental protection structure that we had 100 years ago, which is nil. So the runoff from the farms, the runoff from this and that, finds its way into the water supply, just like the study that was done here a couple of years ago that found that the mother's milk in New Jersey contained rocket fuel from Arizona. It's a function of a disinterested, unregulated industrial state.
Yeah, but you know how to avoid drinking soft drinks without pesticide. Just don't drink soft.
Don't drink the soft.
Find
drinks.
A different drink. Get a water filter.
My God, didn't tea start out in India?
Well, look what we did. We went again, Bob. This goes back to we think we're helping places when really. We're destroying culture.
Well, you know, you're talking about these pesticides and so forth and fertilizers. You know, the nitrogen fertilizers were developed by a German scientist in the 19th century. We
right.
perfected it, however, after the First World War. This is one of those stories from Bob's hometown. After the First World War, in the Shoals area of Alabama, there had been a huge, I mean huge, munitions industry making nitrates, you know, for explosive purposes.
So they get
done with that, David, and they think, you know, here we got this big war-making facility, and we got nothing. We don't need the bombs anymore. And they see the study from the German scientist in the 19th century, and they go, nitrates, nitrates, nitrates. And we're going to make us some fertilizer. And you wind up with the Tennessee Valley Authority International Fertilizer Development Center, which has nitrated the world.
And, you know, this goes into what I was saying is the culture of hyper-indulgence, I call it. If you look at, I was looking at some of the coupons in my mail today, and something I never thought I would see. Burger King now has the quad burger.
Oh, God, yeah.
The quad burger.
Yeah, it comes with its own...
Try to do some math on that and see how many more cows you have to slaughter to make a quad burger.
Yeah, and it comes with its own defibrillator, David. I mean, geez, who needs that?
You know, sometimes I think Burger King is stupid because if they wanted to, they could just trick people, make some kind of Vegemite burger with meat flavor. Maybe they do it already. I don't know.
They got a veggie burger.
No, I mean, just don't tell anybody and say, oh, you're eating meat.
Who could tell? Because it don't taste like meat.
That's what I'm saying. They had a Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Soylent Green is people, David.
Yeah, I know. Soylent Green is people. But that's the problem is that people don't see the solution or the an easier way right in front of their eyes. They want to go for the hard way all the time.
You know, you have got to, you know, I had Michael Pollan on. You've got to read The Omnivore's Dilemma, David. You've just got to read that book.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you'll start on page one, and you'll be on page 463 before you know what hit you. I mean, it's got legs, and it speaks to so many of the things that mean so much to you.
And this ties into my hyperindulgence right here, my last story.
Okay.
What's the real federal deficit? The set the government doesn't talk about is the audited financial statement produced by the government's accountants following standard accounting rules. It reports a more ominous financial picture. A $760 billion deficit for 2005. If Social Security and Medicare were included as the board that sets accounting rules is considered, the federal deficit would have been $3.5 trillion. Congress has written its own accounting rules, which would be illegal for a corporation to use because they ignore important costs such as the growing expense of retirement benefits for civil servants and military personnel.
Yeah, we got two sets of books. We got one that says the book, and we got another one that says, Dear God, please don't ever let the people see this.
Yeah.
And the thing is, that deficit is a monster of fairly recent vintage, David.
And that's true. And I mean... And this is the thing that I was listening to on a white right-wing radio show. They were complaining about the Social Security and Medicare, and I just couldn't help but laugh and say to myself, yeah, but the war on terror, look how much that's grown in 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, the Social Security and Medicare are a lark.
How much is not accounted in the war on terror? That's a good question that nobody, I don't think...
Well, the National Guard story from yesterday, David.
Right.
You know, 60%, something like that. 60% of the National Guard is not ready, not combat ready, and largely that is a function of materiel. Okay, that's, you remember when Katrina struck and we said, you know, where in the hell's the Louisiana National Guard's amphibious vehicles? And,
right.
and we found out, a couple of days later, it was in the middle of a desert. The amphibious vehicles of the Louisiana National Guard were in the desert. And so they don't have those anymore. And, you know, the Humvees that West Virginia sent to the desert, you know, busted along a roadside somewhere.
How about this one? No, I'm not going to say that because I said I wasn't going to talk about it. See, they put it in your head. They hammer it in your head so much.
Yeah.
That sometimes you have to see. This is the three-story cycle. This is a corporation's dream. The more you focus on selected stories, the more you can just basically rack up, and you don't even have to do that much work.
Sure.
just over and over and over again. Mel, 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 Mel. Over 2 or 4 weeks, Mel, Mel. And after a while, you're like, okay, that's enough of Mel. And then they'll go, okay, no more Mel. And then they'll just come up with something else. And they'll run that. And see, that's another thing that I think your guest needs to realize is that the way our culture is inundated. I'm sorry to tell him, but the older people or the middle, they're not going to go to an independent easy. I don't think so. I think your best bet is you have to do the balancing act with the youth. And I'm sorry, that's another thing that I have a complaint. I wasn't going to get into this, but I guess I am now. Is the youth is a big part. And if you look, you don't see what Clinton was doing in the 90s, what he started to do with the youth, with MTV and everything like that. He started going on that path, and then the Democrats, I don't know, they just unplugged. They unplugged Bob, and they said, you know what, we're not going to go that route because we want to be adults. Blah, 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 blah.
Right, you know, and you know, there are a lot of people on our side of the fight who would just assume that I would be a lot, and I got a sense of that earlier, who would just assume that I would be a lot more civil. But I don't want to be civil with these people. These people don't deserve to be have.
You know, and another thing is I'm sorry to tell people, but if you're going to be in the Democratic Party and you want to connect with people, I'm sorry, but it's going to have to be this. If you want to be a presidential candidate, you're going to have to be that entertaining cad. You're going to have to do things that you don't want to, that seems entertaining to a public, and that will win you on your side. I'm sorry. That's the necessary evil. If you can't deal with that, then you know what I say? I say we just get rid of you, we throw you out, and we find someone who can. And that's the problem I have with independents, Bob, because they want to get in. They want to get in office. They want to get into and in power, and they say, well, I'm not going to play that game. Well, I got news for you. That's how it works right now. Fix it later. But right now, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I said about Brian Moore. You know, I don't get the sense that he's running a vanity candidacy.
Yeah, I mean,
he would very much like to win. My problem with Greens and Ralph Nader's and running third party guys for president, that I got a problem with, because it is simply not going to happen.
Nader started on the right track. And what I mean, he started on the right track was, he had Pearl Jam, he had the rock band, but see, you can't just start 6 months before the campaign. You have to put this in their head at a selected time period. You know what it's like? It's like when you put out a movie, right?
Yeah.
When you put out a movie, when you put out music, it's the same thing. I'm sorry, people, independents, but you're going to have to think of yourself as a product. And if you're not, then go cry in the corner, because that's how it works.
Well, there's a contested race out there somewhere, and it's a close race, and I can't remember where it is. And lo and behold, the Green candidate has just gotten about $1 million from the Republican Party. Now, what does that tell you? I can't remember the candidate, but it's a real certifiable, honest to God, it's happening right now.
Oh,
David.
I heard about this. So hot. It's someplace in the East Coast.
Is it Ohio, maybe?
I think it's Ohio, yeah.
Or is it? No, it's Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's Rick Santorum's crazy little Senate race.
See? This.
And the Green Party. Oh, I'm a Green. I love the trees. I love clean air. And yeah, and I believe in the things the Greens believe in. Okay.
And here's an interesting comparison to Bill Clinton and Hillary and all of the DLC Democrats. Where are they at the youth right now? Where are any of these senators and these Congress people? How are they connecting to any of the youth who are of voting age?
They don't care. They don't want to.
And that's going to be their downfall.
Young people are more prone to vote for American Idol than they are for president.
And that's what I'm getting at also. You have to be entertaining on that aspect. You have to have that kind of charisma.
You gotta stand up on Arsenio and play the saxophone.
That's right. You have to do that. That's why people were looking around like Kerry. He's like, is this guy supposed to be funny? Why?
I will now sing an opera piece.
Right.
Yeah,
you know what he should have done? He should have been like the way he is when he goes on Don Imus.
Yeah.
Or when he's just talking to Don Imus. He shouldn't have this consultant.
But see, I've read up on all of this, David. It happened to Kerry. It happened to Gore. I think Gore has wised up to it, you know.
I'm going to say something that's probably controversial, but I...
Not on this program.
Yeah, I'm glad that Kerry didn't win in this respect, because I believe that as soon as a Democrat would have gotten in power, the whole paradigm would be shifted. Everything would have been shifted, and they would have said, you know, why aren't the Democrats doing anything about the war on terror? What is their plan? They don't have a plan. This president has lost it. 2 months into the 2 months into the presidency, that's what would have happened. Probably sooner. Probably January, as soon as he's sworn in. You know, why hasn't Kerry done anything?
Oh, it would have been a lame duck presidency because of the Congress. I understand that.
Right.
Please remember, David, he gave up on Ohio before they'd finished counting the daggum votes.
Oh, and I heard what he said on the Combs show. I mean, Kerry to me will never ever get my vote again. Saying we can't ask a ceasefire for Israel. Blah blah blah.
Well, maybe you can't, Senator, but you know. We understand what the AIPAC money talks. Hey, David, we got to roll, brother.
All right.
Have a good one.
And I said I wouldn't talk about Israel.
That's okay.
All right.
Best laid plans of mice and men.
Later.
Nice try.
Okay.
Thanks. Wow, where's this night gone? We're halfway through. You want to get in on this? 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, the numeral 4, head on. And I will not sing an aria. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
The Teamsters oppose the pensions overhaul bill in the U.S. Senate because in some cases it allows companies to reduce vested benefits, deferred compensation pension money earned by workers. Teamsters Legislative Director Fred McLuckie.
And these are benefits that our members have earned and are expecting to receive when they retire.
The United Steelworkers are joining the Teamsters in opposition to the pensions bill. McLuckie says it's likely to pass, but...
This fight won't end. We'll be fighting at the bargaining table as best we can to make sure that our pensions are secure for our members.
As United States car manufacturers begin looking towards broad international plans, the union representing many auto workers in the U.S. is following suit. Last week, United Auto Workers President Ron Gettelfinger met with the Confederation of Japan Automobile Workers Union to encourage stronger bonds when it comes with dealing with common issues. The UAW has been seeking to organize plants owned by Japanese car makers in the United States, such as Toyota. They have had little success, and it is speculated that the cross-border discussions may lead to a coordinated international push.
Supporters of a real minimum wage hike want to defeat a bill up for a vote right now in the U.S. Senate because it would increase the minimum too slowly and has big tax breaks for rich heirs attached that will have an adverse impact on federal programs for the poor in the future. Holly Sklar of Let Justice Roll.
What we want them to do is, at a minimum, pass the Fair Minimum Wage Act, which has been on the table over and over and over again, the Fair Minimum Wage Act, which is a clean bill. That is, it doesn't mix up the minimum wage with other issues.
More information on the minimum wage issue is available at letjusticeroll.org.
Will it be business and not government that solves the health care crisis? Walmart CEO Lee Scott suggested just that on Charlie Rose's PBS show. Scott, whose company is repeatedly attacked for not offering decent wages and reasonable health care options to employees, said he believes the country is at a tipping point when it comes to addressing the issue. Scott added that business won't be alone in pushing the government towards a solution. He said labor will also play a major role.
Here's today's economic report. America's huge gap between rich and poor has gotten so bad, even Bush's Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson has it on a short list of the country's top four economic challenges. The bad news is that Paulson puts what he calls entitlement programs, you know, like the Social Security you spend a lifetime of hard work earning, at the top of his list of reforms. That's code for cuts in those programs. Paulson so far isn't offering any solutions to the huge have-have-not gap in the U.S. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Now when I was a young man, I carried me pack, and I lived the free life on the rover. From the Murray's green basin to the dusty outback, well, I waltzed my Matilda all over. Then in 1915, my country said, son, it's time you stop rambling, there's work to be done. So they gave me a tin hat, and they gave me a gun, and they marched me away to the war. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as the ship pulled away from the quay. And amidst all the cheers, the flag waving and tears, we sailed off for Gallipoli. And how well I remember that terrible day.
Doesn't take a steamship to break your heart.
The sand and
they
the
leave
water.
On planes. They
and
leave in the dark.
In that hell that they called
and the band doesn't even play Waltzing Matilda.
We were butchered like lambs at the slaughter. Johnny Turkey was white and he pried.
That song always makes the little hairs stand up on the back of my neck. Oh, Lord God. Lord God. If you're bothering to listen. Of course, while... Oh, God. While, thousands of American soldiers have died in George Bush's meat grinder. George Bush's war against the people of Iraq. You know, and that's what we got to call it now. It is George Bush's war against the people of Iraq. Why? Because that's our hand-picked government. Our hand-picked Muslim fundamentalist government in Baghdad. You know, we picked them. We set it up. So we're not at war with Iraq anymore. We got to be at war with the people of Iraq, right? Well, while American mothers, sons, and daughters are getting blown into their constituent pieces by the, you know, roadside bombs, picked off by the Baghdad sniper. Oh God, Bob's not going to stop. Bob's going to start not talking happy things about Iraq again. Well. While that was all going down today, every day, any day, in the meat grinder, they were having themselves some a little set-to before the Senate Armed Services Committee. Donald Rumsfeld said he, by God, would not show up. And then he sort of changed his tune and did an about-face and countermarched back into the Senate hearing room. And there were generals there. Our good friend David writes in from Tennessee and says, today the good senator asked the general, did you see this movement toward an Iraqi civil war a year ago, general? Did you see this movement toward an Iraqi civil war a year ago, general? David writes, silence. More silence. Even more silence. No, came the answer. No. Odd tone of voice and all. In those 3 or 4 seconds that the general went back and forth between the truth and the answer he gave. So many, many people know assuredly that the star-shouldered weasel knew damned well the escalating civil war in Iraq was as sure as death and taxes. Part of him wanted to say, hell yes, Senator, but Rummy and Carl and Wolfie told me to toe the company line or forget my next star. Damn it, I want that star! The pit, David says, the pit we are in is of our own digging. And we are led by people who have never, ever heard what was told to me to be the first rule of holes. The first law of holes. When you are in one, stop digging. Stop digging. So, that wasn't the real highlight. No, the real highlight was when presidential hopeful, God, she's got a hyphenated name now. Presidential hopeful Hillary Rodham Clinton. How about just Senator Clinton from New York? How about that? Was when she squared off against Rummy. She in her blue suit, he in his. And, in reading the blogs and saying, boy, she lit into him. You know, she basically she read an indictment to him. And it was stern stuff, and she called him everything except a free man. But then it was Rummy's turn. Now, I've got a cut for you here. I've got a clip for you. And it's got the very tail end of Mrs. Clinton's remarks, followed by Rummy's response.
And frankly, the record of incompetence in executing. You are presiding over a failed policy. Given your track record, Secretary Rumsfeld, why should we believe your assurances now?
My goodness.
Oh, pause it. Pause it.
First, I've tried to make notes and to follow the prepared statement you've presented.
Just stop it. Did you hear the snide condescension in that? Back it up all the way, Agnes. My goodness. You know, this is the lecture you got from your mother when she looked at you and you were a little kid and she said, I'm not mad at you, Billy. I'm disappointed. My goodness. Hit it again.
Because of the administration's strategic blunders and, frankly, the record of incompetence in executing, you are presiding over a failed policy. Given your track record, Secretary Rumsfeld, why should we believe your assurances now?
My goodness. First, I've tried to make notes and to follow the prepared statement you've presented. First of all, it's true. There is sectarian conflict in Iraq, and there is a loss of life, and it's a...
Have you ever heard any more snidely condescending speech in your life? My goodness. I can't believe I'm hearing this. You got a lot of nerve, lady. Oh, don't you know that Rummy wanted to stick his bony old arms across the table and just rip her heart out and eat it for lunch? My goodness. My goodness. My goodness. You know, I don't know. I'd love for her to have interrupted and said, "Your goodness, you want to try that again and be a little respectful, Buster, or I'll move for contempt of Congress, you killer." But she's got to maintain an even keel because she's presidential hopeful, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. I've tried to make notes during your prepared presentation. I mean, I don't like to use foul language on the show or anything, but that's just positive, you know. And I'll ask people who know better than me, is when you hear that, is that just the definition of bitchy? Agnes is nodding her head, yes. Yes, dear.
I wasn't just thinking of that. I was thinking of condescending.
Well, we did condescending. But, I mean, I'm going to try to make some remarks. I've tried to make some remarks while following your prepared presentation.
But would you expect any more
from it? I can't believe you would wear that tone of blue on a day like this. You know what I mean, Agnes? My goodness. Okay, so yeah, back it up a hair and let's pick it up again.
There is sectarian conflict in Iraq, and there is a loss of life, and it's an unfortunate and tragic thing that that's taking place. And it is true that there are people who are attempting to prevent that government from being successful. And they are the people who are blowing up buildings and killing innocent men, women, and children and taking off the heads of people on television. And the idea of their prevailing is unacceptable.
Rummy, buddy, got a question for you. How about the people who are raping little 15-year-old girls and shooting dead Iraqi men and going into villages claiming that they had orders to kill every military-aged male? Are they, Rummy, a part of the problem in your formation of this grand and glorious Islamic democracy? Are they any part of the problem, Rummy? Cut to.
You said the number of troops were wrong. I guess history will make a judgment on that.
Already has.
The number of troops that went in and the number of troops that were there every month since and the number of troops that are there today reflected the best judgment of the military commanders on the ground, their superiors, General Pace, General Abizaid, the civilian leadership of the Department of Defense, and the President of the United States. I think it's not correct to assume that they were wrong numbers. I don't think the evidence suggests that, and it will be interesting to see what history decides.
Interesting. Interesting. It'll be interesting, right, Rummy? Because it's all just a sterile academic debate, and there's no blood, and there's no gore, and there's no goo, and there's no little bitty Iraqi babies with their arms sticking out of the rubble, is there, Rummy? Is there? I think history will have to judge that. Rummy, dadgummit, has anybody, can you get off the acid long enough to realize that this is not 2003 anymore, and you are not sitting, oh, we'll be welcomed with candy and flowers, and of course I'm an excellent driver, drive slow in the driveway, it hurt my neck. It's not 2003 anymore. What you did is already history, Rummy, and history has already judged it. That's why there are books out there like with titles like Fiasco. Rummy? You incompetent yutz. And that's not just me.
We had the advice of the generals in the offices and on the ground, and a couple of them sitting in a bar swigging Bloody Marys.
No, how about, come on, help me. Strange name, I got it.
You'll see everything. You'll see the big board.
Yes, you'll see the big board. How about John Shalakashvili? General John Shalakashvili, before this whole fiasco started, of course you know this. General Shalakashvili said, Rummy, buddy, you're not doing it quite like it ought to be done. It's going to take a whole lot more than the people you're sending in to get that nation straight and squared and on the road to peace and freedom and frisbees and wheat checks. So, yeah, history did kind of judge it already. And no, you did not follow. You did not follow the advice of your generals. So far, what you've done, you know, he's General Pace, geez. General Pace has been on the job for less than a year. You know? General Pace did not formulate the war plan. I don't think there's anybody on staff right now who formulated the war plan. They're just screwing up the one that's in place. These are not the first. Please understand, the general staff of the military right now, these are not the first string screw ups. These are the second string screw ups. Some of them are third string screw ups. Some of them are from the scout squad. You know, I mean, not even, you know, don't even get to go to the travel games. They just sit there in the Pentagon. Cut three.
The idea that the Army was disbanded, I think, is one that's kind of flying around. My impression is that to a great extent that Army disbanded itself.
Disbanded? Now, I'm not going to sit here and be a grammar ninny or anything, but this is one of the Vulcans!
Well, I've been to one World Fair, a picnic, and a rodeo, and that's the stupidest thing I ever heard come over a set of earphones.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, Major Kong. This thing about the Army being disbanded, Ed. What, are you so whacked out of your mind, Rummy, that the past tense is beyond you? Disbanded? It's been flying around. You know, it's just been flying around. History will tell us. No, it isn't. Because Rummy lives in some sort of alternate universe, Rummy has forgotten that he had a little revolt of retired generals calling for his head. What, 7, 8, 9 of them? You know, a bunch of really cowardly generals who were afraid to say anything while they still had their, little shoulder board hickey thingy shiny things on their little the soldier costumes. Didn't have the guts to say anything while they were serving, but, you know, they got out and hid behind a bush and said, Rummy's crazy! Oh, Jesus, he's nuts! Over there, that's him. He's crazy. See him over there? Yeah. Pull the branches. I said, yeah, Rummy, he's nuts. He's crazy. I had to serve under him, and I was such a coward. I didn't dare criticize him back then, but he's crazy. He's incompetent. Yeah, that revolt. 4.
Afghanistan.
Afghanistan.
I don't know who said what about where the Taliban are gone, but in fact, the Taliban that were running Afghanistan and ruling Afghanistan were replaced. And they were replaced by an election that took place in that country. And in terms of a government or a governing entity, they were gone. And that's a fact. Are there still Taliban around? You bet. Are they occupying safe havens in Afghanistan and other places?
Pakistan.
And other places?
They're not in Afghanistan.
Is the violence up? Yes. Is the violence tend to be up during the summer and spring, summer, and fall months? Yes, it does. And it tends to decline during the winter period. Does that represent failed policy? I don't know. I would say not.
Spring, when a young Afghan's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of RPGs. Now, I can only speak for myself. And you can only speak for yourself, but use the phone, dials right in here, 877-443-2366, 877-443-2366, or email bob@headonradio.com. Go into the chat room at headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. I want your thoughts. And the thought that I want, do you run around with this kind of internal monologue going on?
Not even on a good day.
Shall I get up out of bed? Gosh, yes. Will it be cold when my feet hit the floor? You bet! Do I have to go really fast to the bathroom because my old prostate's not... Yes, sir, I do. I mean, shall I go to the car? Shall I put the key in the ignition? Yes, I will. Will I actually turn the key while it's in the ignition? You bet! Are we dealing? Yes, we're dealing. Are we dealing with psychos here? I mean, this isn't the only time he's done it. This internal monologue.
You know, it's one thing to sort of think to yourself, well, oh, my God, what a beautiful blue sky it is today. This is going to be a good day. Watch somebody come along and screw it up. You know, that's normal, I think. But is it normal? I mean, what is this rhetorical crap? And the self-correction. Are there parts of the Taliban who got reconstituted in parts of Afghanistan? Yes, there are. And, the correction, Pakistan. I mean, after everything he said, is he worried about getting pinched for lying to Congress on the Afghan? No, he's got to say Pakistan. Well, you know, we ran them all out of Afghanistan. They're out of there. That was the whole thing. You know, Senator Clinton. She said that they're the Taliban's reconstituted in Afghanistan, but they're not. They're not in Afghanistan. They're 6 yards away. There's a cave in Afghanistan, and then 6 yards away there's another cave, and that's Pakistan, and that's where the Taliban is.
Reconstituted like orange juice.
Yeah, reconstituted. Yeah, like the powdered milk. Next cut.
The decisions that are being made with great care after a great deal of consideration.
Uh-huh.
Are there setbacks? Yes. Are there things that people can't anticipate?
Oh, again with the monologue.
Yes. Does the enemy have a brain and continue to make adjustments on the ground, requiring our forces to continue to make adjustments? You bet. Is that going to continue to be the case? I think so. Is this problem going to get solved in the near term about this long struggle against violent extremism? No, I don't believe it is. I think it's going to take some time. And I know the question was, some wars lasted 3 years, some wars lasted 4 years, some wars lasted 5 years. The Cold War lasted 40-plus years.
Jesus, the 100 Years War lasted 100 years! Thanks, Rummy!
Wait, he can count. That's great. But the last time I heard somebody have a conversation like that,
talking
I
to
worked
himself.
At the state hospital, and they had that person on very heavy meds.
Well, see, I think that's the problem. Rummy's on some heavy meds that are non-prescribed.
Oh, he's not on enough.
You know, just get up in the morning, yeah, a little MDMA, you know, a little bit of acid. You know. Do I have my mushrooms sauteed with my steak? Yes, I do. Do they make me see the walls breathe? Yes, you bet. Oh, Rummy. That's just pathetic. And the thing that will make you get on your knees and crawl under the dining room table and just hunker down and huddle there and shiver and shake and cry is that man has the power over probably the children of people you know.
Yeah.
You know, little boys who rode their bicycles up and down the street. Hi! Thought they were being patriotic, doing their thing for their country. That man has the power over whether they live or die. Now, are we going to lose some soldiers in Iraq? Sure, you bet. Aw, so you lost your boy in Iraq. Are you sad? Gosh, yes, you're sad. But then again, maybe I'm just being ugly. Let's take a break. Because there's one last quote from Rummy. And I want to give it the time it deserves. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you. Only the good die young. That's what I said. Only the good die young. Only the good.
This is the Quality News Network. Hezbollah fired rockets into northern Israel today, killing eight in the bloodiest day yet for Israel since the fighting began. Israel later launched strikes into Beirut while 10,000 ground troops battled guerrillas in South Lebanon. In the Gaza Strip, meanwhile, Israeli aircraft continued firing at Palestinian militants. Eight people, including an eight-year-old boy, were killed. In Washington today, a top military commander told Congress that unless the violence in Baghdad is contained, the country could descend into civil war. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld wouldn't say whether the U.S. would maintain its operation in Iraq if a civil war were to break out. During the meeting before the Senate Armed Forces Committee, Senator Hillary Clinton criticized what she called Rumsfeld's failed policy in Iraq. She later called on him to resign, saying he's lost credibility. In Baghdad today, at least 10 civilians were killed and 32 wounded in a motorcycle bombing. Another dozen people were killed in scattered violence elsewhere. Japan has loaned Iraq $29 million to help jumpstart the country's economic development. The country's foreign minister says Japan will continue to support Iraq's reconstruction despite withdrawing its humanitarian troops. In Cuba, the Communist Party says it will retain control of the country no matter what happens to President Fidel Castro. While he recuperates from surgery, Castro handed over power to his younger brother Raul and delegated power for various projects among six government officials. Some see this as a sign that the island nation may be headed toward a more collective form of government. In Texas, President Bush stopped at the U.S.-Mexico border to get a firsthand look at border control efforts. He then left to spend 10 days at his ranch in Crawford, the shortest summer vacation since he took office. Numerous heat-related deaths are being blamed on the nation's heat wave, but forecasters say relief should come tomorrow. In Miami, terrorism suspect Jose Padilla's trial has been postponed until January. His lawyers had argued that they could not be ready by September when the case was originally scheduled to be heard. And in New Orleans, a federal appeals court has ruled that former Congressman Tom DeLay's name should remain on the ballot over Democrats' objections. DeLay resigned in June and is awaiting trial on money laundering and conspiracy charges. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
AOL says it will eliminate as many as 5,000 workers within the next 6 months. That comes as the company restructures to attract more online advertisers. Microsoft is daring the world's best computer experts to try to hack into its Vista Windows operating system, which will be released early next year. The company made a test version available today to security experts. The Commerce Department reports that new factory orders rose last month by 1.2%. That's the largest amount since March. The FDA has approved seasonal flu vaccines made by four different manufacturers. 100 million doses are expected to be available for this season. Ford is recalling more than 1 million large pickup trucks, SUVs, and vans. The company warns a problem with the vehicle's cruise control system could lead to a fire. Apple Computer is teaming up with GM, Ford, and Mazda to integrate its iPod into car audio systems. The collaboration begins with the 2007 model year. Sprint reports lower than expected second quarter earnings of $370 million, causing its shares to fall 14%. The company says it expects slower growth in the wireless market. Light sweet crude settled at $75.46 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 43 points at 11,243. NASDAQ up 13 points at 2092. S&P 500 up 2 at 1280. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Rummy makes my head hurt. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. You know, neither George Bush, nor Rummy, nor Cheney, nor Condi, nor Wolfie, nor Pearl, nor, you get the idea, have attended a single military funeral. Not one. They've never seen, you know, you've seen, yeah, I know, you've seen one, you've seen them all. You know, the flag, the thing with the, you know, folded into the triangle like when you were in third grade and played paper football. Yeah, I know. Big deal, huh? Big deal to the people who were involved, I'd say. But you've heard that rationale that they offer. Well, we can't go to one soldier's funeral because if we went to one soldier's funeral, we'd have to go to all the soldiers' funeral. And which soldier's funeral do you choose to go to? I mean, George Bush offered that as a rationale. Like something in third grade stuck to him. Little Rummy. Rummy. Are you chewing gum, little Rummy? Gosh, yes! Do you have enough for the rest of the class, little Rummy? Why, heavens to Betsy, no. My stars. Well, little Rummy, you understand that if you don't have enough gum for everybody, you can't chew gum yourself. Spit it out, little Rummy. My goodness. You know, it's not the same thing. It's really not the same thing. Now let's assume for a moment, because I don't think this question's ever been answered. Let's assume for a moment that General Peter Pace just went, ah, you know, and died. Boom. Breathed out, didn't breathe in again. Gone. Do you think Rummy would show for his funeral? Why, heavens to Betsy, yes. Would George Bush show for Peter Pace's funeral? Richard Myers' funeral? Would they show for General John Abizade's funeral? You and I both know that, of course, they would. Now, I think the logical question then is to ask, what's the difference? Well, some of it's the jewelry and the quality of the little soldier costume. The generals have more hardware. And shoulder boards and spiffy stuff and drive nice cars. On the other hand, the regular military grunt, you know, his wife might be living in some sort of subsidized housing, getting food stamps, and qualified for welfare, while her hubby was off getting sort of molecularized by a roadside bomb. So that's, you know, never mind the inane third grade analysis that they give to it. They know they do not dare show up at a military funeral because the aggrieved people might just turn on them. Or at least that's their thinking, because they're cowards, each and every one of them, from Rummy to Cheney to George to Condi. They're cowards. They're not Vulcans, they're Romulans. Because if you follow your Star Trek, you know that the reason that the humans had never seen the only part of a Romulan you ever see is his back. Because they're cowardly. Okay, enough of my Star Trek geekiness. But they know they dare not show up at a soldier's funeral. Because they're afraid to. But if it was Peter Pace, if it was Richard Myers, if it was John Abizade, if it was some high brass, they would be there in an instant, and the protestations of grief from the podium, from Rummy, from Condi, from Cheney, from Bush, would be stunning. You know they would be there. Byron Dorgan's. Was it Byron Dorgan? His nephew was slaughtered in Iraq recently. Will they show up for the funeral of a senator's? Was it Byron Dorgan? Max Baucus? I'm sorry, I forget. Will they show up for a senator's nephew? And if they will, well, you know how it goes. But there is one comment, and I do not have it on tape. Tape, schmape. I don't have it on a little circuit board somewhere or in a little tiny computer file. Rumsfeld said that he had never, quote, painted a rosy picture, unquote, about Iraq. He said he's been very measured. And then he looked Hillary squarely in the eye and he said, and I quote, "You would have a dickens of a time trying to find instances where I've been overly optimistic," unquote. Okay. Let's help Hillary with her homework. Let's help Hillary with her homework. Then we go to the phones. How about December the 18th, 2002? Question. What's the current situation in Afghanistan? Rumsfeld. It is encouraging. They have elected a government, though, through the Loya Jirga process. The Taliban are gone. The Al-Qaeda are gone. How about February 7th, 2003? It is unknowable. Maybe this was back when he was doing the known gnomes and the unknown gnomes and the garden gnomes and all. It is unknowable how long that conflict will last. He's talking about Iraq. It could last 6 days, 6 weeks. I doubt 6 months. How about February 20th, 2003? Jim Lehrer asked him, "Do you expect the invasion, if it comes, to be welcomed by the majority of the civilian population of Iraq?" He responded, Rummy did, "There is no question but they would be welcomed." Talking about the American military. "There is no question but they would be welcomed." March 30th, 2003, "The war is underway. It happens not to be the area where weapons of mass destruction were dispersed. We know where they are. They're in the area around Tikrit and Baghdad and east, west, south, and north somewhat." I've never painted a rosy picture. I've been very measured in my words, and you'd have a dickens of a time trying to find instances where I've been excessively optimistic. I understand this is tough stuff. "There's no question but they would be welcomed." I don't know. Was he under oath today? Is that a lie? Or is that him dancing nimbly around the concept of being charged with lying to Congress? That's the stuff of fantasies. Forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. Let's go to the phones. Andy is with us from the UK. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how's it going?
I'm going well. You?
Wicked. I had to take exception. Everything was fine right up until you said that they were the Romulans. And they're not. They're the Ferengi.
Oh, I don't know. I think that's even a little... Okay, okay. Ferengi.
The Ferengi are total capitalists. They're the worst part of the robber baronist types. And they're absolute cowards. And they will only attack when they have overwhelming numbers.
That's true. Well, true.
Romulans will attack on their own with a single ship, but they just do it sneakily.
Right, that's what I meant. They'll never come up to your face.
No. They're more like the Ferengi, trust me on this one. The Romulans got a really bad press in the original series. They get a bit of a better one in the follow-on.
Okay, you know, I'm more of an original series, the Next Generation guy. I never got fully immersed into the Ferengi and Deep Space Nine and stuff.
Oh, you should have watched Deep Space Nine. That's great. It had the Ferengi, the Romulans, laid the Klingon action, the Dominion, the Cardassians.
Yeah, the Cardassians. Now they're a creepy bunch.
Yeah, they're total fascists.
Yeah.
You know, Gene Roddenberry and his basic idea, he wasn't too far off what happened.
No, I mean, this is that's why I don't mind making the comparisons, because he was making comparisons in the first place.
Yeah, I just can't believe he got away with it. But anyway, that was all I wanted to say. I mean, you're absolutely right. Why would they go to a military funeral? I mean, it doesn't matter to them, does it? None of these people are real.
No, they're not. They're toys.
Mm-hmm.
They're toy soldiers.
Yeah, being played.
It's heartbreaking, Andy.
It is. And what's worse is that you know, if you or I went to a military funeral, and the chances are we'd end up finding somebody there who thought George Bush just could do no wrong.
Oh, I know. And then I'd be the one. Yeah, we'd be the ones winding up getting arrested. I know. Of course, I don't know if you saw the news today. The Army, our Army, the U.S. Army, has upped its recruiting age.
Yeah, I'm not surprised about that.
They're at 42 now.
Yeah.
And the first crop of 42-year-olds are going through basic down in South Carolina right now.
But, of course, you've got to remember, I mean, you know, you've already got people older than 50 serving in Iraq anyway from your National Guard unit.
Oh, yeah. There was a the psychiatrist, I think he was, from maybe Decatur, Alabama.
Yeah.
70 years old, wound up in Iraq because he was part of the so-called Ready Reserves.
Oh, well, yeah, once you're in the reserves, that's it. Until you're dead, and even then they might call up your son.
Yeah.
Well, I think it may come down to that.
Yeah.
But it's you know, well, we can't take much more of this. And when
and as usual, the ruling class will blame the working class when they revolt. And, I mean, it'll happen. It'll happen either gently, because the Republicans will not manage to hang on during the election. And, you know, my view, I think you're going to get them stolen again. Or it might happen violently, because the Republicans do steal your elections. And it might not be this time. It might be the next time. But, you know, whenever violence occurs in a society to do with politics, it's invariably the fault of the ruling class for forcing it to that position.
Well, I don't know if I can go all the way on that premise with you, Andy, because I'm sad right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we make great sport of the Mexicans, mm-hmm, here in the United States. I forget the great Mexican statesman. The great, you know. But he said, "Poor Mexico, so far from God, so near to the United States."
Yeah.
And you know, we do. We make great sport of Mexicans, and we carry our economy on their backs.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, right now, there is a demonstration of a love for self-government and free government and democratically elected government going on in Mexico that we. Not, there is not a liberal, not a progressive, not a Democrat who had the guts to do what a million Mexicans are doing right now.
No, I know, but the point is that your situation isn't the same as the Mexican situation. Because, I mean, the people in Mexico, in a lot of cases, are literally starving to death. Now, although there are people starving to death in the United States, they're starving, on the whole, a lot more slowly to death. And it hasn't got to the critical stages. But, you know, it's going to take what? Say the Republicans do steal it again this time, and they keep control of the House and Senate until 2008. How many more people are going to be in poverty? What's George Bush done? Put like 13.5 million Americans in poverty or something?
Sure.
How many more are going to be in poverty? Because, I mean, I don't know where they get...
No, how many are uninsured? It was when we were doing the 2004 election, Andy, it was 47 million uninsured in America.
Well, there you go. That's 47 million poor people over the course of the next 5 years, because they're all going to have some sort of medical illness.
Yeah. Now, but you know, as I don't know, are we numbed? But, I'm not necessarily talking about the poor. And everybody who's in the streets in Mexico is not necessarily poor.
No, I know. But, I mean, that's what I mean about your situations are different. It's getting there. And that's why I can see you're moving towards a point where there'll be some form of revolt, passive or active. And again, like I said, it depends on what the ruling class do. I mean, if they keep squeezing out your middle class jobs and keep pushing all those white collar workers into unemployment or into poorly paying blue collar jobs, if they keep pushing all the blue collar workers out of their jobs so that the white collar workers fill them, then that's where you get to the point Mexico is now. And it's not going to take much more than a couple more years, Bob, for that to happen, if they want to keep on the same course.
That's terrifying.
It is terrifying. And the problem, of course, is that it's like your earlier vacillations between independent and Democrat. You're a Democrat, and you always have been. But to be honest with you, Bob, the Democrats are playing you as badly as the Republicans. They're just
some of them are.
Evil about it.
Some of them are. I don't have
individual Democrats. There might be some good ones, but you know, individually, there might be some good Republicans as well. I mean, you know that.
Well, don't stretch reality.
No, I'm not stretching reality. I mean, there was a guy called Barry Goldwater that I've only heard good things about. I don't know who he was.
He's largely been rehabilitated. He ran against LBJ in 1964 and suggested using nuclear weapons as a first strike.
Right. Well, you know, hey, he's not the first person to have talked about that, Democrat or Republican.
No.
But, you know, I mean, the Democratic Party play you just like the Republicans play you, but they play you for slightly different reasons. They want to stay in power to seem nice, and they're the ones who'll keep everyone fat and happy. So that's not a bad state of affairs. But the Republicans are the ones who'll squeeze you to the bone because they've got two basic philosophies. The Democratic style of elite ruling class believe that keep them fat and happy and they'll stay quiet, which is quite correct. They're always more logical. and the Republican type of the ruling class always think that you should squeeze them until they bleed and then squeeze them some more. And the Republican type have been the one that have caused all the revolutions in history.
Well, my problem with independents and third parties, Andy, is more philosophical one, really, simply because the system itself is not set up to admit, and I think we've had this discussion, up to admit of third parties.
But you don't need a third party. You need independence. And that's, I mean, your whole system.
We don't need a third party. We need a second one.
Well,
I mean, that's a little bit flip, I understand.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, but no, you don't need any parties. You need independence. So you just keep slamming independent characters in there. Because, I mean, say you get 100 independents in there, 99 of them will agree on 99% of the topic.
No, I don't have any problem believing that Brian Moore, if he was elected to the Senate, would vote with the Democratic Party probably 99% of the time.
Well, you look at the history of independents in the House and Senate, and they do. That's what happens, because on the whole, the Democrats will vote for things that are morally right. Now, they're not doing it because they're morally correct people. They're not. They're all immoral, amoral, and godless, horrible demons. But they do it because they know what PR is. Now, the Republicans, of course, go out to crush us because they like it. I mean, they enjoy seeing people suffer. I really believe this. I think George Bush and Barbara Bush and Senior get off on watching poor people starve. There's nothing that's ever been done to prove otherwise to me.
No. And the beautiful mind comment and the, you know, really they're better off in the Astrodome comment from Babs. You know, you'll notice they've got Babs under wraps a little bit more tightly these days.
Well, they know that they can't let her out. The American press might not report very much on what she says, but in Europe, that was played and played and played. That was like, look at what the mother of the president of America really thinks. Da-da. And again.
Yeah, it's like Holland. It's like having the Queen Mum say something that rotten.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Queen Mum was actually fairly racist and pretty bigoted and evil, but she had the good sense to keep her mouth shut.
Yeah. It's in the breeding.
You know, I have a very, very little respect for the royal family, and virtually none for various elements of the royal family, but on the whole, at least they keep their mouth shut.
Well, when they're not running off to parties in Nazi uniforms, but that's another.
Well, yeah, Harry's never been one for the brain.
Not the sharpest knife in the royal silverware drawer.
No, I mean, I personally think he's probably been kicked in the head by a couple of horses at some point doing all that messing around on hunts they do, because he's definitely got the brain capacity if somebody's taken a couple of heavy blows to the head.
Well, what I was saying about the third parties versus independents, though, we have this tendency, you know, Ralph Nader, okay? Ralph had a lot of good ideas. Ralph was utterly neutered by the position that he took.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, third party candidacies for major offices in the United States are used to the benefit of one or the other one or the other of the two parties. For instance, the third party candidacy of Ross Perot inured to the benefit of Bill Clinton in 1992. Mm. In 2000, the third party candidacy of Ralph Nader, or the independent candidacy of Ralph Nader, inured to the benefit of George W. Bush.
Well, yeah, I don't think any candidates for president as an independent are any good at the moment, simply because you don't have enough independents in the House.
You know, if you want to run independent, but, you know, the thing is, the people who think that, you know, I'm going to run as an independent, and I'm not necessarily lumping Mr. Moore into this situation, but the people who want to run as independents never want to run for mayor. They never want to run for county commissioner or alderman or dog catcher. No, by God, they want to go to Congress, and they want to be a senator or president or governor, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the nature of the beast, I guess, of politics. But, you know, I mean, that's what you need to work on. You need to go to the people who are challenging the incumbent Democrats and say to them, you know, if they don't get into the seats, if they lose their challenge against an incumbent Democrat, say to them, right, well, we need to get you to work as an independent in some other field. Take control of a state legislature. Take control of a school board. Take control of, you know, who takes the bins out and stuff. Whatever.
Well, the classic case, and I mentioned it in the last hour, I don't know the guy's name. He is a Green candidate, and he is running for Senate in Pennsylvania against Rick Santorum and Bob Casey? Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Casey's the Democrat, and he's pro-life. Santorum is the Republican, and he's pro-life.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot, that, you know, but Santorum is insane.
Yeah,
okay?
Santorum's nuts.
You know, and it's one of those situations where we'll take a small step to get rid of that clown and get pro-life Casey into the Senate and then, you know, build the fire up, put the billows to it, get it white hot and hold his ugly little feet to it.
Well,
or at least so the thinking goes. But into this process comes this Green candidate. And of course, he, you know, he is unabashedly pro-life or pro-choice, unabashedly everything that liberals and progressives are for, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
He has received $1 million from directly, Andy, from the Republican Party, expressly for purposes of siphoning votes off from Casey to try to save Rick Santorum's crazy hide.
Well, yeah, there's nothing unusual about that. I mean,
and it's a thrown away vote.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, first of all, it could backfire and he could actually get elected, in which case every Democrat in the state is just
No, it's physically impossible. It is mathematically impossible. He cannot be elected.
Why is that?
Why?
Hmm.
Because the mainstream Democrats will vote for Casey.
Says he.
The polling data, the mainstream Democrats, they're going to vote for Casey.
Yeah.
It's a juggernaut. It's the money. The money controls all.
Well, yeah, but, you know, ultimately, actually, the dude with the card and the machine controls all. So don't be too surprised to see Santorum retain.
Well, no, right. Santorum could, Santorum wins. If Santorum wins, it is because well-meaning, principled, liberal Democrats have said, you know, I'm going to vote my conscience.
Well,
and
yeah, maybe. I mean,
the ballot box is the last place. I hate to sound like such an unmitigated cynic, but and probably a hypocrite too. But there are places where you don't take your conscience into the voting booth. I know that's awful, Andy. I know.
No, you do. You do. You do what you have to do, and if that means voting with your conscience, that's what you have to do. But, I mean, I would say that if everybody went out and actually voted with their conscience, and, you know, all the Christians sat down and read the Bible and went, judge not lest ye be judged, and then went out and voted, the Green would be elected and you'd have a pro-choice member. But, you know, I mean, ultimately, right, until the machines are out, you can't trust any result. So you'll never know who's going to win. Personally, I put my money on Santorum because he's a Republican and they'll retain him if they possibly can. If not, well, it sounds like there's Democrats or Republican as well. So, you know, people need to work on that angle. You need to.
Yeah, he's definitely from the Lieberman wing of the Democratic Party.
Well, then he's a fascist. It's that simple. If he's from the Lieberman wing of the Democratic Party, he's a fascist, just like George Bush.
Could very well be.
Well,
and frankly, the idea, you know, Rick Santorum, among other things, if he is retained, this guy's got presidential ambitions for 2012, maybe 2008.
Isn't that something about people who are insane not allowed to serve?
No, well, yeah.
Well, we know it's not against clinically stupid, because otherwise Junior wouldn't be in there.
Well, I mean, you've probably read the story. Rick Santorum and his wife brought a little dead fetus home that she had given birth to and terrorized their baby children with it. I mean, that's how religiously nuts this guy is.
Well, I mean, their children would have been taken off them if they lived over here.
They should, and frankly, Child Protective Services should have been involved here.
Yeah. Of course, that's where privilege comes into it.
I mean, this is a guy who said that because the Supreme Court finally got around to ruling that two guys having sex was not a criminal act. Santorum came out the next day and said, well, the next thing they're going to rule is it's okay for men to have sex with dogs.
Well, that's where he gets his name, Man on Dog, isn't it?
Yeah, that's where Man on Dog Santorum comes from.
Yeah. Well, at least he's not like Chimpy McCakes being the president.
Chimpy McCookspoon. Well
said.
Yeah,
you've got to thank the Stephanie Miller listeners for that one. I've got to admit, I pick up a lot of my names from there.
No, I know. I picked when I heard Malloy refer to him as the guacamoron the other night, I about fell out of my chair.
Yeah, no, that one's a good one. The giggling killer one tickled me as well.
Raisin brain. Raisin brain. Andy, thanks so much. Have a great evening.
That's cool, man. You too. Love to Agnes and the family. And everybody out there, start working towards getting real people elected, not these crazy mannequins.
Yeah, exactly. Appreciate
care, man.
Hey to Hazel.
Yeah, I will do, man. Thank you.
Later.
Goodbye, man.
I'm conflicted. My personal view is that we have got to get... We have got to get, by some manner, the House and the Senate out of the hands of the Republican Party. Because they are literally killing us. They're killing us piecemeal, wholesale in Iraq. You know, if the Bush administration gets its way, we talked about the suicide hotline last night. You know, it's not like there's going to, you know, and they defund it. It's not going to be, you know, 1-800-SUICIDE. It's not like there's going to be a rash of suicides because of that. But how can you know? Well, you can know that if, A, people were using it and therefore not committing suicide, if it's not there and people aren't using it, they're going to go ahead and do it. And it's a matter of Republicans literally killing us. Can you stop it individually? No, but if you add your voice to the din, you can. So what's going on? You know, what's going on in Pennsylvania? I probably share more in common with that Green candidate than I do with Casey. But you know what? Casey has to win. Because there's only Casey and Santorum. The Green candidate cannot win. Same thing in West Virginia. I personally, right now, don't think a whole lot of the votes that Robert Byrd has cast in the last 3-4 years. Robert Byrd has to win. Because the alternative is John Racy, and that man is crazier than a cockroach on a 3-day decon binge. It's twice I've used that tonight. Let's take our bottom of the hour break and then roll it home. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob.
And through an open window came, like Sinatra in a younger day, pushing the town away.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Bruce Burch radio program, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m., connecting people.
Listen, not only we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that, Sarah.
It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent you an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total camp.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. I'm going to have to put treat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's worst bitch fight on internet radio.
This is great. This is great. So do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Burch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Thanks, Agnes. Nice, rock and roll yank out of the rabbit hat. I appreciate that. 22 minutes before the hour, and a couple of, you know, odds and ends, things to hit as we roll downhill, because you're probably pretty much sick of just hearing me rant and rave. No, I'm going to do that for 22 more minutes. Our good friend Luke in Knoxville sent along something. The comment to the link that he sent said, apparently it's time to start rewriting history so Republicans can teach their version to homeschoolers. You know, the homeschoolers, Adam and Eve rode to church on Sunday on the back of a dinosaur, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, and what he's referring to, oh Lord God, apparently, Chris Matthews, Tweety, the screamer, claimed on his program. And I mean, you know, sit down, take a shot of something, whatever it is that you got to brace yourself. Blame Clinton first, you know, that kind of thing. Well, he's gone all the way around the bend. He said, quote, "We know President Clinton didn't stop the September 11th, 2001 terror attacks on the World Trade Center." You know, I just want to, I want to chew aluminum. I do. It just, I mean, what, and, you know, we talked a little bit about Dear Leader and his claim, I ate too many birthday cakes. And we did a little psychologicalizing on that. I'm sorry, that's psychological aiding. Got to get my bad grammar straight. But can we do the same thing with Chris Matthews? Well, we know that Bill Clinton did not stop the attacks on the World Trade Center on September the 11th, 2000. I don't do Chris Matthews. My God. I mean, that really shows where he is. His deep-seated angst or what, you know, pick a foreign word about the fact that he didn't get the job as White House press secretary or something. Is that what, am I remembering that right? And he's gotten it all the way to 9/11. Just said it out loud. Now, I mean, I know, you know, Anthrax Coulter has said, you know, September 11th was Clinton's fault, and all the the usual repig suspects have said, you know, 9/11 was Clinton's fault. You know, why wasn't he on the coal? Why didn't Clinton get blown up too? You know, that kind of thing. But Chris Matthews. And, you know, it wouldn't be so bad. Honest to God, it would not be so bad if every time I think of 9/11, I didn't think of George on what was by then his second vacation, third vacation to Crawford. On August 6th, being presented with the August 6th, 2001 presidential daily briefing entitled Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S. You remember the document that Condi said was a historical document. You know, just like a history of the Romanovs. I studied the Romanovs. I was a Russian studies major. I played piano. Ding, 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 ding. It doesn't end. It's Bill Clinton did not stop the attacks on the World Trade Center. And see, the wound is still not closed from yesterday evening and playing those NORAD tapes. I could scream, but you know, you've probably got expensive speakers on your computer, and I don't want to bust anything. I can't afford the bill. But does anybody ever call any of these goobers on it? I mean, this was a conversation about Dear Leader, and whether he was protecting New York City from terrorism. And out of that, you get Clinton. I mean, what kind of sick obsession does Chris Matthews have that it get Clinton, 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 Clinton? You ever go to Bart Cop? You ever seen the little animated thing that he runs about Tim Russert with the clown nose? Clinton's hunt. Clinton's hunt. Clinton's hunt. Clinton's hunt. Might be time for Bart Cop to animate Chris Matthews that way, too. It's astonishing that it's the liberal media, you know, the liberal media, that liberal Chris Matthews. See, he's so liberal, he can't even tell that George W. Bush is president. That's how bad he wishes Bill Clinton was still in the White House. I'll bet he does. Because we had 4 solid years of Chris Matthews' dirty face inside Clinton's zipper trying to, is Monica in here?
Pluck.
No, I mentioned earlier talking with Andy, it's official. Dateline, Fort Jackson, South Carolina, out of USA Today. The Army has begun training the oldest recruits in its history, the result of a concerted effort to fill ranks depleted during the Iraq War. The Army will now take you up to age 42. I'm getting nervous. I'm 43 and a half. I'm guessing by next year they'll be taking people, you know, they went from 38 to 42, so that's 8 and 4, so they'll be up to 46 by next year. They want me. They just really, really want, but I'm not going. I'm not going unless, you know, I get like the really cool costume with the jewelry on the shoulders. The Army also hopes to attract more recruits by offering shorter active duty periods for some recruits, especially the dead ones. Signing bonuses and bonuses for soldiers who persuade others to join. Hey, come here, kid. You want a watch? David Chu, Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, says the improved health and fitness of middle-aged Americans makes it possible for them to enlist. They're in such good health now, those middle-aged Americans. They're in good enough health for us to send them to the desert and kill them! Allowing older soldiers makes sense if done properly, says Lauren Thompson, a military analyst at the Lexington Institute, a nonpartisan think tank in Arlington, Virginia. For frontline combat troops, it's a bad idea, Thompson says, but nobody's proposing putting 42-year-olds next to 18-year-olds on combat patrols. If it is correctly run, it could be a real boon. Horse hockey. You know damn good and well they'll put 42-year-olds next to 18-year-olds. Because, see, that's the problem. The 42-year-olds they already had, they've gotten killed. We've talked about it before. They've eaten their seed corn. The battle-hardened, grizzled, come here, kid, types that they had in the boot camps and the instructional schools, they got them blown up. They got them killed. They've got them maimed. They've got them wounded. They ain't got them anymore. I don't know. 43 and a half. I'd make an excellent chaplain's clerk. Don't you think, Agnes? To accommodate older soldiers, the Army has lowered the minimum physical requirements needed to pass basic training. Oh, this is going to offend the veterans. The first group of older recruits is going through basic training here. So far, only 5 people, 40 and older, age, and 324 age 35 and older have enlisted, Army records show.
How many sit-ups does the 42-year-old have to do as opposed to the under 35 crowd? Like 42 sit-ups and 24 push-ups and...
No, I think it's 46 sit-ups and 29 push-ups, something like that.
But, you know, it's just sad. It has gotten so bad that, you know, they're not even succeeding at getting the poor kids off the farms and out of the barrios fast enough. Pathetic. Simply pathetic.
And, well, because I follow Things Alabama. An editorial out of the New York Times today. You remember while we were all fretting about black boxes and touchscreen machines? And, well, the Republican Party's gone us one better, I'm afraid. And they did it in Alabama. Fascinating. Straight out of the text. President Bush's Justice Department has been criticized for letting partisanship guide its work on voting and elections. No, really? And party politics certainly appears to have been a driving force in a legal maneuver it just pulled off in Alabama, my poor, poor state, where it persuaded a federal judge, wait for it, to take important election powers away from the Democratic Secretary of State and give them to a Republican governor. Because, you see, Alabama was a little late meeting a federal requirement to create a, what, computerized statewide voter database. So Nancy Worley is the Secretary of State of Alabama. She also happens to be a Democrat. And she said it was absolutely outside her control. So the Bush Justice Department moved in, sued, went to court, asked a federal judge to take away her authority over these election issues and hand it off to Republican Governor Bob Riley. But it gets better still. Because when the Secretary of State, who by definition of Alabama law has to be defended in suits by the Attorney General, well, Ms. Worley went over to the Attorney General and said, give me a competent defense. And the Attorney General said, I'm a Republican too, sister. Screw you. So then she said, well, okay, I need permission to hire outside counsel. And the Attorney General said, permission denied, sis. So they went to a federal judge, keeps getting better all the time, a federal judge who was recently put on the court by the Republican by the Republican Senate, approved by the Senate, by virtue of a nomination from Dear Cake Ate Too Many Cakes leader. And so the Attorney General, who was supposed to represent the Secretary of State and the Governor's Office and the United States Justice Department, argued to this federal flack, hack, crook, that the elected Secretary of State, designee of the people of the state of Alabama to deal with election issues, should not have the right to perform her constitutional duties. Federal judge said, hell yeah, let's party. Republican party, baby. So, now, when Alabama's voter registration database is finally completed, it's not like none of it's done, it's just not finished on time. You know, like the Senate Intelligence Committee's 9/11 report isn't done on time. When it's done, it will be one of those choice point databases now. Do I know this from the article? Do I know this from the Do I know this from the editorial from the New York Times? No, I don't. I know this because I damned well know Republicans. There will be, because you see, with Howard Dean turning the Democratic Party southward and saying we are no longer going to concede the hard-working people of the South, the Republicans have to revert to every damn dirty trick that is available to them, including rampant, rabid disenfranchisement. So, you know, we'll get a voter felon list from Texas, like Catherine Harris did in Florida. And we'll use Texas felon names to scrub Alabama voters. Especially those who might be prone to, you know, commit VWB, voting while black, or VWL, voting while liberal. And away we whistle. Poor Alabama. Poor America. And in its high-toned style, the New York Times writes,
"It would not be the first time the Bush Justice Department seemed to play party politics with elections. Political appointees approved the pro-Republican congressional redistricting plan in Texas and a voter ID law in Georgia, despite objections from staff lawyers that the plans violated the Voting Rights Act."
We'll save what I think about the New York Times for later. Bunch of enablers. Two words, Judith Miller.
It's the Judy Miller Show.
We want a war in Iraq.
That's it. I hope you enjoyed the program as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. I certainly enjoyed your email participation, your telephone participation, your chat room participation. The participation that I find out about when the show repeats over at radiopower.org. The program this evening was, of course, produced by my darling wife, Agnes. She answered your phone calls, too. Brian Reznor announces, John Fox in Sydney, Australia, is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasting of all the programs on the Head On Radio Network. He's got a fundraiser going on. You know what to do. All the programs on the horn, whether it be Dr. Bill O'Brien, Mark Levine, Guy James, Bruce Birch, or Head On, they all happen because there are several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, and they get up every day and they go and they build the American dream. They do it safely, too. And in so doing, they help support this network, and they help to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.